Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. I hope you will. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birch. Hope is here.
Hello.
And we're finally here doing our Code Geass episode after putting it off for a really long time because it's so long.
Yes. It's 50 whole episodes.
Yeah, 50 episodes of Code Geass, which I watched in the last, like, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks or so.
It was 1 week for me.
Yeah, well, you'd seen it before. I mean,
I could skip around, but yeah.
Yeah, I'd never seen the show. But joining us, I'm really excited to have this guy on the show. When I put out the call for someone to contribute for the third chair on our Code Geass episode, my Twitter feed just exploded. People telling me, you gotta get this guy. He's known as Scamp. It's spelled 5Camp on Twitter. You can read his writing at The Cart Driver and at My Anime List. Joe Dempsey is here. Joe, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks very much for having me. I'm incredibly annoyed that one guy on Twitter has the username of Scamp and I'm stuck with 5Camp.
Well, it's a pretty... that's a pretty common...
It is a common one, but he doesn't tweet anything.
It's just going to waste. That's a bummer. So tell me, why... When I put out the call, I said, hey, we need someone to talk about Code Geass. Everyone was like, if you don't get this guy, just don't even waste your time. Like, it was that they were passionate that I needed to have you on the show. So for our listeners that maybe don't know you or aren't familiar with your stuff, why would they tell me that?
Because sometimes it seems like I'm the one critical opinion who still likes to champion Code Geass. Says, no, really, guys, this is still really good.
Okay.
I know it's pronounced gay ass, but it's still really good.
It certainly was in high school.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Are you watching Code Geass? Yes, I am watching Code Geass. Like, man, 16-year-olds. I just, you know.
I think the fact that it actually is pronounced like, you know, a homosexual rear end. It's like, yo, yeah, that is actually how you pronounce it.
Well, given that the show's intense popularity did in part stem from the pairing of the main two characters.
Right.
Yes.
It's not completely
out of context
or unwarranted.
Suzaki really wants Lelouch's gay ass.
Yes.
Yes.
Man, are we going to get in trouble for that?
I don't know. It's in context.
Sorry to tell. Okay, well, again, it's really a pleasure to have you on. Thanks a lot. So the way we always start these things is we sort of reminisce about how we came to the show first, how we first discovered it or how we first experienced it. And Hope, why don't we start with you?
Okay, it was airing on, there were probably, you know, fan subs in 2006, I'm sure there were, but the point people were talking about it was more 2007 or so, I believe, when it was on... when it was on Cartoon Network. I think it started airing in the spring. It started airing early con season, because I remember watching the first episode of the dub on Cartoon Network while I was at a convention, and everybody was sort of freaking out about it and making a big deal about it. And it was at the convention that Johnny Young Bosch was at, so it was, you know, sort of weird. You'd see him at the convention, and then we saw this episode at night, and, you know, sort of an odd juxtaposition. But, preface, I guess, I never really got into Code Geass. I wasn't a big fan of it, but it was all around me. Like, it was, that show was a hit. The only thing bigger than that show at the time was Death Note, and they were airing back to back, and you really couldn't discuss one without discussing the other. And I was surrounded by a bunch of anime fans in high school. So it was all anybody was talking about, for, you know, parts of my junior and, I guess, senior year. And, it was just sort of a series of excited water cooler discussions every week about the show. It's like, oh, did you see what happened this week, or did you see what happened this week? And then once the first season ended and there was that lag time, people would discuss the fan subs of the next season. They didn't really wait for the Cartoon Network airing like they did the first one. And It was intense. It was exciting. I did follow the show somewhat. I fell off the wagon and didn't watch, like, as it aired with the second season, but I followed the first one pretty far. And even if I didn't, like, it was kind of like Game of Thrones, where even if you're not watching Game of Thrones, you know everything that happens because everybody is talking about it. So it was a, like, very intense sort of thing, and people called the characters things like Ladouche and Uzaku, which Uzai means annoying in Japanese, and that's where that came from. We had some Japanese transfer students, and they informed us that Japanese fans were calling him Uzaku, so we started calling him that, too, and stuff like that. So it was very, I was very entrenched in Code Geass fandom, even though I wasn't really a fan of the show. I didn't dislike it, it just sort of existed, and I liked Death Note more, so that's the one I paid more attention to. But yeah.
So, I mean, when did you eventually watch the second season?
Like a year or two later. Like, it was after all the fervor had died down. And I just wanted to see. I mean, I knew how it ended, but I wanted to see it. I wasn't really incensed to, like, that's the thing. So when people were discussing the first season, they were excited about it because they wanted to know what happened next, and they were really, you know, up in arms about everything that was twisting and turning in the story. And with the second season, they were mostly just tired and sort of resigned. And so, like, even as it was airing, and these are high schoolers, they were like, this is stupid, this is bullshit, I'm exhausted with this, I'm so angry. But they wanted to finish it. So they would discuss it, but they would discuss it like they hated, but they loved it, but they loved it, but they hated it. And that wasn't really, I wasn't urged to check it out based on that kind of anger. So I saw it later after all the hate watching had kind of ended, and I knew what to expect. I knew this second season is going to be kind of bonkers, so I'll just, I mean, the first season was bonkers, but this second season is going to be really bonkers, so I've prepared myself. So I waited, yeah.
And Joe, how did you come to the show?
So I got into anime around 2007.
Okay.
So the first season had it was ending as I got into anime. So I was actually weirdly, I did see the first episode very early on in my fandom, but I just finished watching Death Note again because hey, they were the two big shows at the time, and watched the first episode and thought, man, this is just a Death Note ripoff, and then didn't watch it for another 6 months. Until, I think, around a year after I got into anime, I started watching stuff weekly. After watching an absolute motherload of anime within that first year.
Right.
And R2 was one of the ones that people were going nuts about, so I watched original Code Geass then. And absolutely fell in love with it. Wasn't going to watch the second season, but when Hope says that this show completely took over fandom, specifically it seemed like in the second season. You know, but there's one, I got into anime by watching, like, illegally ripped off fan subs stuck on YouTube kind of thing. That's the area of fandom I was in.
Right.
So you would watch, you know, you'd be watching a fan sub of the first season of Full Metal Alchemist, episode 23, and you'd finish watching the episode, look into the comments, and someone would spoil the latest episode of R2 there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the kind of level we're talking. It was absolutely everywhere. So at some point, I just joined in and caught up around about episode 13, and then just watched them weekly by then.
Yeah, the memes for that show were really intense. Like, I think the only show that had more intense, unescapable meme, if you had any interest in anime at all, was Death Note. But it's kind of an even anomaly. Like, those shows are similar enough on the surface that it was absolutely inescapable. Which is fine, because I thought a lot of the memes for both shows were funny, because they both take themselves very seriously, so they're extremely easy to make fun of. So, you know, it helps that I found a lot of that stuff funny.
Wait, so you watched the first season and you totally loved it, and then you were just not going to watch the second one?
No, I was going to wait because it was still airing. I was at the phase in my fandom where it's like, why would I watch something while it's still ongoing? Why don't I just marathon all when it's done?
Oh, I see. Okay.
I was at that phase in my fandom.
Honestly,
until I got everything spoiled for me and thought, okay, I think a character death was spoiled for me. And it's like, all right, I have to do this watching weekly thing then.
Those years were when anime fandom was transitioning from let's binge watch everything on DVD to now let's watch it weekly, like, as it comes out.
Yeah.
Now it's almost exclusively week to week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really, like, the only time people talk about anime, like, in terms of, well, I just watched this whole show, is, like, what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Otherwise, anime, like, the discussion, conversation in anime fandom is entirely about week to week airings.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting transition over time. you know, while American media is sort of switching over to binge viewing, which is weird how that happens. I was obviously extremely aware of Code Geass. It did completely take over anime fandom, hardcore anime fandom. It totally took it over. Death Note was a more mainstream thing that was, like, in Hot Topic, and obviously they both aired on television, but Code Geass never broke out of anime fandom.
No.
It was never popular with anyone else than anime
it's
fans.
It's too Japanese. If you were friends with, like, anime fans, you couldn't tell the difference. Like, as a teenager, I couldn't tell the difference, and as I got older, I was like, oh, this is too Japanese for the mainstream, but Death Note wasn't, and that's why it, like, pervaded the Hot Topic.
Well,
Death Note's much easier to explain straight off. It's just like, here's a guy, he's got a book, it's got a more... Its art style is also less colorful in anime. It looks more serious.
Death Note is a pop song with a catchy hook. Code Geass is weird prog rock that only fans of prog rock are really gonna like. Mm. But those people really get into it. Like, that's kind of it. And I watched, I think, the first episode for a preview guide or something and thought, I just didn't get to me. I should preface... those years, 2007 to about 2009, those were some dark years for me. I was going through some dark stuff back then, so I wasn't paying a lot of attention in general. But over the years, you know, it kind of retained its popularity. As much as people talked about how dumb the story was, especially in the second season, as much as people made fun of it, as many memes as there were, it was a bona fide hit. This was a success. And I always sort of took note of it, like, well, how much do we do on Code Geass, like, in terms of the site? Like, what kind of editorial do I want to run? That sort of thing. So it was kind of a go-to. I think we wound up reviewing a lot of toys, because there's a ton of Code Geass toys.
Yeah.
And it dominated for a couple of years. I feel like 2009-ish, it started really tapering off. And it found its way into the top, like, five of our encyclopedia, and it's kind of always been there. I've always sort of just kept it at arm's length, and I didn't really know why. But then we started doing these single show podcasts, and I was like, well, okay, Code Geass, because it's in the encyclopedia and also maybe one of the most requested. Mm-hmm. Like, people really wanted us to do Code Geass. I think it's because they wanted me to sit through the second season.
They wanted to hear you yell at it, I think.
Which I certainly did. I think I spent, like, at least a few hours yesterday just yelling about the second season.
I was just sitting here, and I was like, you should save some of this fervor for the podcast, but he was angry.
It was mad. The show made me really mad.
It didn't make me mad on revisit, but we'll get into that, I guess.
Okay, well... That's hardly salient to the point that I'm
trying to make. I'm just saying varied reactions. I'm not angry, but you know.
Yeah, okay. I watched it all over the course of the last about 2 weeks. And I guess we should just start with the first season. I guess we'll go through this chronologically because thematically there really isn't anything to talk about with Code Geass. It kind of has one point that it's trying to make. Mm-hmm. At first, it seems like it's going to be, like, this nationalist fucking nightmare, and I feel like it doesn't, no pun intended, I guess, I feel like it doesn't turn into that. Mm-hmm. Eventually, that's all a red herring, I feel like.
Yeah, it was interesting watching it, because, like, we think of nationalism in anime a certain way, and people talk about Code Geass being nationalist, but when you go back and watch it, it's kind of like saying Independence Day is jingoistic. Kind of... Technically true if you turn your head sideways
and
squint at it.
In an extremely shallow and simplistic, not particularly angry at other nations, or it doesn't have an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Its only point in terms of nationalism is Japan should be ruled by the Japanese.
Yeah, it's not a world conquering. Other nations are out to get us, and we must militarize. It's not like that, which we get so much of that now.
At least that's my opinion.
Yeah, no, I felt the same way, especially like the way that China is portrayed. Usually, just the fact that China is portrayed and it's not 100% positive is also something that people this is nationalist, and it's like, no, compared to nationalist media that I've seen, this is nothing. Like, this is fucking nothing.
Well, we're living in the age of Mahoka and Gates.
Yeah.
And
oh god, Mahoka.
I highly recommend Joe's piece on Mahoka, which really opened my eyes, and I feel like you wrote the definitive takedown of that show. Like, that's the piece. That's the one.
Why, thank you. It does I particularly like Mahoka as, if anything, like a contrast to the nationalism in Code Geass, because it's like, no, the completely ridiculous villains on the Britannian side for Code Geass, they're basically what the main character is saying in Mahoka, and we're supposed to agree with them.
Yeah.
And Britannia, like, at least Britain, I know it, because so, like, the map shows it's stemming from America, but culturally, name-wise, everything, that's, okay, that's Britain, that's France and Britain, and it's an invisible fantasy enemy, it's not America.
We'll talk about the nationalism a little later. My point bringing it up, I know it's such a hot topic, but was to say, like, I don't feel like that's not really a theme of the show. It's as weird as that is to say, after seeing the whole thing, nationalism isn't really a theme in Code Geass.
No.
My interpretation of its nationalism is that it's very, like, I think there is a little bit broader to that, in that it hates Japan's own looking back to their old glories idea. You know, they've got the characters who dress up as the old rebellious people, or dress up as the old military uniform. And the show is extremely dismissive of them, for example.
Well, and then there's that episode where the Elevens, as they're called, are taken with a drug that makes them nostalgic.
Yeah.
Which I was like, this is Code Geass's, like, idea of, like, subtle social, like, social con- like, social commentary. Like, just, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
My favorite guy in that episode is the one guy standing on the phone going, yes, Japan is a technological mass marvel compared to the rest of the world, and he's living in the past, and it's like, oh, this is...
Or China isn't portrayed like as some sort of evil aggressor or anything. There are a lot of good Chinese characters, but the evil portion of China are literally eunuchs. They're literally the Grand High Eunuchs, and it's like, this is not subtle social commentary, Code Geass.
Yeah, no. but anyway, so the point is, I think it's tough to talk about Code Geass if you're just going to break it down according to themes, because, like, when we talked about Fate Zero, we did it by character. Some shows we've done it by theme. This one, I feel like we just kind of have to go through the story. Mm-hmm. Like, as painful as that might be, go through this crazy fucking story. Especially because there's such a clear break in between the first season and the second in terms of what the story does and how it's functioning. And so I feel like we need to sort of encapsulate the beginning of this show. Joe, do you feel comfortable doing that? Sort of running down, to give us a basic plot of the first season?
Basic plot? Oh, man.
At the beginning.
So I have to remember the order of everything, because that was one thing going back at watching the series again, was realizing, oh god, I have no idea how all these individual events connect to each other. Right. I remember the twist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brought us to strokes.
Give us the basic plot.
So, it is the year 2015, I think?
16.
In the world of 2016 in Code Geass, and Britannia has swept the world, this giant nation, taken over Japan and stripped them of their nationality, and they're now Area 11. You know, so there's this upper class, lower class, and we meet our boy Lelouch Lamperouge, or Lelouch v. Britannia, depending on what mood he's in. And he is an uptight... No, he's not an uptight. He's a sullen, smarter-than-thou noodle person, thanks to Clamp's amazing character designs. And so he then leads a rebellion under this guise of this character called Zero, who wears a cape and a mask so no one knows who he is. And he leads these unhappy Elevens, aka Japanese, against the Britannian Empire, and he becomes this symbol for them as they fight against them. And one of their first moves is to capture Lelouch's old friend, Suzaku, who is a Japanese person who is fighting with the Britannians, with his goal being, I'm going to change it from the inside, whereas Lelouch has changed it from the outside. And that becomes the main conflict throughout pretty much the whole show.
Right. The show is very much set up as one philosophy versus another. Mm-hmm. So it's Lelouch's you have to be a terrorist, mm-hmm. versus Suzaku, who is sort of trying to become like a knight. He wants
violence
is wrong. The means never justify the ends. Mm-hmm. If you don't do things the right way, then your victories are meaningless. That's kind of his attitude. Mm-hmm. And for the first season, this kind of sustains it for a while. I would say. There's a bunch of crazy plot twists. And you tell me, Joe, I'm sure you don't agree with this, Joe, but I felt, after, well, like, 10 episodes of this, that they have all these military conflicts, and, oh, now this is happening, and what, this guy is a, he's a double-crossing double-crosser, like, now he's a double, he's like a triple agent for, like, it, you know, all this crazy shit happens. It's, that stuff on the surface is very complicated, but the story isn't difficult to follow because it's all still going in the same direction. Like, this is an incredibly complicated thing, but it's all very well contained. Like, you know the borders of the story, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of it is just kind of, like, noise. Like, it's just noise. Like, the story is pretty straightforward, but there's all this noise and all these proper nouns and, like,
it has a jargon. Cast of thousands problem.
Yeah, cast of thousands.
Yes, it does have a cast of thousands. One of my favorite completely dumb little things about the show is that every minor character has, like, clearly a lot of effort put into their character design, even if they only appear on screen for all of 5 seconds.
Right.
They have one line, they say it, and they really mean it, and then they die.
Yeah, exactly.
they got their money's worth from Clamp. So the other really important thing to mention is that Lelouch has the ability called Gias, which is this symbol in his eye that if he makes eye contact with someone, they will follow his order no matter what he tells them to do. Mm-hmm. So he can literally just make anyone do anything so long as he can make physical eye contact with them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work over TV screens, right? So like,
or with glasses, yeah. If he had contact lenses. Like, if he had to wear contact lenses or glasses, it wouldn't work, so it has to be...
I think it did, because he has these people who've been wearing glasses.
Right, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Put it this way, the rules are not that important, because there's one scene in season 2 where he geeses people to do whatever he says, which I think is cheating, because that's basically like saying, I wish for 1,000 wishes.
Here's the thing, like, that you have to ignore that possibility, and I wish the show had ignored it up until the end, except it didn't. It has a couple of instances where he says, from now on, follow my orders, and it's like, why didn't you do that with literally every person you ever... Because Gias does not wear off, so they tested this. It doesn't wear off over time, so...
Would that be like a monkey's paw situation, where if he tells them, like, you have to do everything I say from now on, that means they can't function without him telling them what? So he would have all these people where he's responsible for their day-to-day activities?
It didn't work that way with the Navy. The point at which the show breaks its own rules is he commands a naval officer and his men to do this, and it doesn't work that way, so no. I think it was just, oops, we shouldn't have broken that rule, because... ignoring that, you have to ignore that plot hole and just assume that he can only make one command to somebody and then it doesn't work anymore. He has one wish for each person that he, like, gasses, and that's it.
Okay, anyway, the power is given to him by a mysterious green-haired girl who makes a contract with him. And it's like, you know, I'm going to give you this power, but you have to do something for me eventually. We won't say what, because that's the second season. So he then uses his power to start building his rebellion, and on his side is a young lady named Callan, who is most of the fan service in the show, and a couple other plucky rebels. Like, they're kind of they're a ragtag team of lovable rebels that...
Callan is the only one that is in the first round. When people start changing sides wildly, it's different. But in the first, at the beginning, Callan's the only one that is really important and has any, like, character depth at all. So.
Yeah, and she's sort of fiercely loyal to the cause and has her own reasons for being loyal to the cause. So the first, like, half of the show, basically, that's what you're watching. The first thing Lelouch does is kill his brother, who is... What was his exact position? He was next in line to be emperor, right?
Yeah.
No, he was...
No.
He was something like fifth or sixth in line, because the emperor has like 52 children or something like that.
But he was like the face of Britannia. Like,
He was the viceroy for all of Area 11.
Okay, right.
So he was in charge of that area. Hence, killing him is why it would send that area into turmoil. It's why they sent Cornelia in, who's another one of these daughters of Britannia.
Right. And it's all very serious until a cat steals his helmet, and they spend an entire episode chasing down the cat who stole his helmet.
Well, all the student council scenes are like something out of a different show.
Yes, and that's the other thing. So that's the other important factor, this is a double identity. His secret identity is Zero. No one knows he is Zero, except Cece, who is the green-haired girl.
C2.
C, whatever.
Yeah.
Cece.
It's spelled CC in the subtitles, which he watched, but they are saying C2, so it's...
C2, okay, anyway. He is also part of the student council at this prestigious academy that he goes to, and so the show also has a bullshit anime high school element to it that it will keep going back to.
Yeah.
They are stuck on that. They're like, no, we have to keep going back to the school, and it feels... That stuff felt totally incongruous to me.
And
like, I'm watching two different fucking shows here. This show is trying to have it always. Like, it is trying to be everything.
To every person.
To everyone. It is hitting... you like this kind of show? Okay. Here's well, you like dancers. The high school stuff? Here you go.
Yeah.
Well, you like robots? Well, there's that. Like, trying to give you everything.
It succeeded, but I mean, like... It's funny because they're usually, and you can't look at an anime, sometimes, every once in a while, you can look at a work of fiction and go, this one thing, if you took it out, would make the thing so much better. And you can't do that very often. With Code Geass, I think demonstrably you can. If you took out the student council shit and the high school student aspect of it, it would be much better. Like, that is, I think, demonstrably, like, provably true. If you just took this part out. Like, it's completely unnecessary.
Well, there are two characters in the student council that are really important to the story. One of them being Nunnally, which is a dumb name.
It is. It's almost Callan, for God's sake.
Who is... Nunnally is dumber than Callan.
It is.
I thought she was Karen for a long time, because that name made a lot more sense.
It does make sense, and people said it makes sense, but the official Japanese
is Callan,
was
yes.
Callan, and it's like, are you sure? And they're like, yep, and it's like, are you okay.
It's like, we can tell you that this name is, oh no, okay, all right, Callan.
Yeah, well, yeah. So one of them is Nunnally, which is his sister, who lost her sight and her legs in the accident that killed Lelouch's mother.
Yes.
Which is really the catalyst for all of this.
Right. Lelouch isn't really interested in this, because Lelouch, being a scorned prince of Britannia, like an exiled prince of Britannia, and is not really interested so much in liberating Japan because he thinks the Japanese people should be free, should be their own sovereign nation. He is more interested in basically undoing all the wrongs that led to his mother's death and his sister's blindness and leg no worky. So he's
quite a petty person, really.
He's like, extremely petty, like
a lot of this is just him wanting to get one back on his father the whole way through the show.
Yeah, that's, I mean,
pretends every now and then that there's this greater ideal of I want them to protect weak people like the Japanese who have been taken over, or people like Nunnally who can't walk or see for themselves.
Yeah,
but in reality, it's about getting back at his dad.
Yeah, he thinks of himself as a protector of the weak, and it's not really about Japan. It's about anybody of any nationality he's centered in Japan, but it's about anybody of any nationality, himself included, who has been wronged and righting that injustice, which is why it was so easy to compare it to Death Note, because it has that and many other little things in common with Death Note. But, that leads to, like, I think, the best part of the show, but I'll talk about that later, I guess. But the one thing I think is the best about the show on any kind of deeper level, if it has a deeper level, but the show itself, I'm not sure is aware of it. I don't know if it's an accident or not, but I guess we'll get into that.
Anyway, so that's kind of the first third of the show or so, like the first 20 episodes ish.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what you're dealing with, and there's a lot of side changing, and most of it is sort of like Lelouch versus Suzaku, and like Suzaku has a crazy mech called Lancelot that can do a bunch of shit that none of the other ones can.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the fights are, it's a desperate struggle to see which side will come out on top. Uh-oh, here comes the Lancelot.
Yeah.
Like, that's it for the first, like,
right.
Third of the show.
It's brains versus brawn, and Suzaku is the brawn. Like, Lelouch is the plotter, and he has the skinny twig arms, and Suzaku also has skinny twig arms, but they're supposed to be slightly more beefed up, and he's the, like, super physical guy, and so he can't beat Suzaku in a fight, but he has to outwit him. It's that dynamic.
Right. Anyway, so the big sort of turning point in the series comes about two-thirds of the way through, which is when Princess Euphemia, who is another sort of figurehead of Britannian aristocracy...
She likes Japan, and she's in love with Suzaku, and she wants to make it a better place, or whatever. She doesn't have the power to do so, but she's a nice lady.
Yeah, and she's a pink-haired princess with huge boobs, because every girl in the show has huge boobs.
There's not a flat-chested one among them.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
Apart from Nanali, but I don't think that really counts.
Well, no, that is, that would be odd.
Though not be on the show, let's be honest.
No, I'm just kidding.
I didn't know that this happens in this show. Oh, and it God. About fucking killed me when it happened. Basically, Euphemia gathers as many Japanese as she can into this arena and says, like, okay, I'm going to establish a new special protected zone where you can still call yourselves Japanese, and I'm going to give you all kinds of rights. Britannians and Japanese will be equal in this special zone.
Mm-hmm.
And she has all these people gathered in this arena, and I was like, wait a minute. And I didn't think it was going to go down the way it went down, which is Lelouch confronts Euphemia, telling her, you can't do this, this is not the right way to do it. And they get into a casual conversation about his Gias power, and he goes, for instance, if I told you, just kill all of these people, you would have to do it. And she goes, just kill all of these people. And it turns out that his Gias was on, and he accidentally genocided, like, a million of his own people.
That feel when you accidentally genocide your entire...
It's a whoops. Like, he fell into a wedding cake, and now a million people are dead.
Oh, my God.
It is one of the most absurd and hilarious plot twists I've ever seen in an anime. It took my breath away.
Fantastic.
In terms
of sheer impact at the time, you're like, no. Oh, God.
It's funny because it's such transparent scripting. Because normally, I mean, in a good tragedy, I'm not saying Code Geass is a bad show, but I do think it's a bad example of tragedy. I don't think it wears tragedy very well at all, even though it tries. And in a good tragedy, you would have this be tied to the character's flaws or a circumstance or some sort of something that means the thing. Or at least would naturally happen. But it's so transparent that Lelouch, that first they get all these Japanese together in one big stadium, and then he and Euphemia talk it out, and then he says something that he would never say, and it happens to be when he's losing control of his Gias, which, by the way, they built up to a lot. It's like, oh, if he uses too much, you're going to lose control of it. Guess what? He never loses control of it again after that. That is the only time.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, oh, no, I'm losing control of it. And then he never does again, but that is the only time, just so that this can happen this way. And he just casually says, he's like, oh, man, my power is really serious. And she's like, oh, really? That doesn't sound so bad. It can't be, like, that serious. And he says, no, if I were to say something ridiculous, like, kill all the Japanese people, you'd have to do it. And it's like, this is not something he would say. This is not, like, something he would condone. It is so dumb. It is there for the contrivance of this plot twist to be as sad as possible, and that's it. It has no lower resonance, nothing. So it's, I mean, like, yeah, it sticks out to everybody. Everybody remembers that because it is the most transparent. You can see the person's hand on the script suddenly instead of the show. You see somebody write.
This would be like if in Star Wars they take Princess Leia to the room on the Death Star, and they're like, that's your planet Alderaan, and we're going to fucking destroy it unless you tell us where the rebel base is. And they have no intention of destroying Alderaan, but she slips on a banana peel and hits the button to destroy Alderaan.
That's kind of like that.
This is the equivalent of what has happened in Code Geass. Anyway, so that happens. And then kind of like, well, and now everything's out the window.
Changes everything.
So the first season wraps up a little kind of ambiguously.
Cliffhangery.
It's cliffhangery for sure. Basically, Lelouch and his knights are kind of
sort of fucked
at this point.
Well, no, they were about to win, and then Lelouch finds out that his sister's been abducted and runs off, abandons them, and all of a sudden, like,
they
the whole fight
can't do anything
basically
without him, so suddenly they're just, like, falling into cakes everywhere.
Yes.
The minute that he leaves, oh no, he left us! It's like, guys, you're military trained, you can still do... So, yeah, Nanali is kidnapped, he runs off to find her, and then he and Suzaku discovers his secret identity, and they point guns at each other, and season two.
Yell each other's name, and then bang, and then no more season, no more Code Geass for the next year and a half.
Yeah,
was it a year and a half break? That's basically pretty...
Actually, even better, the last two episodes for the first season of Code Geass, so basically just as soon as they had, you know, Princess Genocide happen, the show then took, like, a 3-month break. because I was supposed to be one of those ones who get episodes delayed. It's why the last two episodes of the first season are actually a hell of a lot better animated than the rest of the show.
Oh, I see. Yes,
because they had a 3-month break to make it look really nice.
The show just screams. Yeah,
the show would really like to hang these giant twists and go, all right, we're going to take a big break now.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was, I mean, the show just screams, oh shit, this is a hit. Oh shit, this is how big of a hit. We got to reconfigure, like, starting with Mao, who is a throwaway character that sort of sets the plot aside gently for a minute so that they can waste a little time before they come back to it. I think the creation of Mao and his little side plot was basically there to rejigger the end of the show so it could be longer.
My theory is that if the show had not been a hit, they would have ended the series with not Princess Genocide not happening.
Oh, absolutely.
That just would have been it, and that would have been the end of the story.
Well, I don't think it would have been the end of the story. I think they were always intending to destroy Lelouch and turn him into his dad. But I think that would have done it. They would have, Mao wouldn't have been in it, and there would have been, they would have basically jumped straight to their ending twist, which is clearly the only thing they were planning from the beginning, with his dad and everything. And basically what was going to happen to Britannia, just with less character death, with less twists, without any of the new character introductions. A lot of the same stuff, but without the, I don't want to call it chaff, but it kind of is, without all that extra stuff. I think it was always going to be one season, and they went, shit, this is huge, and then they, like, rejiggered things and wrote the Mao episodes in, which are not particularly well animated and rely on telepathy, which requires the characters not move their mouths. They just stand there. It's like, well, that's convenient. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
The Mao episodes were quite good, I thought, though.
I liked them.
They're definitely
fun.
The sense of, like, oh, yeah, this is definitely a side story. But
they're fun,
works.
But
that's
they weren't. I don't think they were particularly animation intensive, is what I'm saying.
No, they weren't. Yeah.
No. Yeah. So that basically wrapped up the first season, and so I guess my question is, and Joe, I want your take on this. How do you feel about how did you feel about Lelouch as a protagonist? Did you feel like you were supposed to sympathize with him? Did you think it was more complicated than that? Like, how did you feel about him?
Well, I think when you're talking about Code Geass and the fact that we brought up Death Note so often kind of hints that. So in Death Note, you are not supposed to sympathize with Light at all.
Right.
He is the villain. Mm-hmm. That's definitely not the case with Lelouch, but you're also not supposed to think he's the hero. Mm-hmm. He's definitely, like, this guy is doing things that he paints himself as an evil person. He constantly spends most of the show trying to say, particularly towards the end of the second season, is like, I'm doing evil things here. Mm-hmm. This is for a goal, this is for a mean. I am a petty person, but ultimately my goal is just. So it's more complicated than either being sympathetic or not. He's not the hero. Mm-hmm.
See, I felt like it was less... I thought he was kind of unambiguously you're supposed to be rooting for him most of the time. It seemed to me like what he was doing was, okay, unorthodox, in some cases maybe a little immoral, but he was always in the right. Like, you are supposed to be rooting for the Japanese to get their country back. Uh-huh. You are supposed to be rooting for that to happen, and he's going to make that happen through any means necessary. He happens to have the superpower that can control people into doing things, but he almost never uses it to, like... It's always in service of his cause. Like, it's... He only turns into a straight-up villain towards the end of the second season, and that's on purpose. Yeah. He's doing that intentionally. So I feel like the idea that he's, like, this ambiguous, well, are you supposed to root for him or not? Like... I feel like you are, and Suzaku is painted as this total fucking naive idiot who doesn't know shit about shit and is doing the wrong thing all the time and is giving in and giving Britannia what they want. Suzaku's method is never shown as effective. Lelouch gets results.
There was this specific moment in season one where he gets knighted by Euphemia, and that at that moment was them saying, see, Suzaku's method works. You know, all these people are now suddenly becoming integrated into Britannian society now. This is, you know, Japanese are starting, and because Euphemia was one who came up with this idea of this, in, you know, the Japanese get their own zone where they can call themselves Japanese, Euphemia got that because she was becoming friends with Suzaku.
But at the same time, the show refutes that by season two. It says, look, Nonnally is doing this as well, and Lelouch has to actually actively go against his feelings for Nonnally, which are his entire motivation, in order to say, no, this, I still believe that this is wrong. And the show proves him right on that. Like, it's like, no, creating the specialized zone is still a means of control. It will be used. They literally, because this show is not subtle, they literally have this speech delivered about this new special zone and all of this stuff to control Lelouch from a ship called the Sword of Fucking Damocles. It is obvious that the special zone is meant to be, like, well-intentioned, but it's like, this is a band-aid, this is not a solution, Suzaku is wrong, Lelouch is right. And I think it is to the show's credit that it is not paint. I mean, there are a lot of shows now where the protagonist is, like, super perfect McPerfect, and they create a straw man to be, basically to make him look even better. And I think it is to the show's credit that they created Lelouch to be kind of a bad person. You're still supposed to root for him, but they created him to be a bad person, and Suzaku is a straw man to make him look better, but he needs it. Like, I think it's not fair to Suzaku, and it's pretty shitty of him, and they create Suzaku to be shit upon and occasionally be right, only to be proven wrong later in order to pretend they kind of have complexity going on. But still, like, Lelouch is right. A lot of what he does is wrong, and it's going to destroy him, and it's bad for him, is beautiful, dark, twisted romance that's going to destroy him. But, you know, he is a anti-hero. He is meant to be rooted for, even though you're sad that he has to go through such tragedy in order to achieve this. And Suzaku is there to make him look much better, because it's like, well, look at this good guy who was working for the bad guys. Like, if you don't side with Lelouch, you have to side with Suzaku, is the way that the show pushes you. It's a very solid narrative trick, but it's a trick.
Yeah, I feel like with Death Note, when you had people like saying, yeah, the Light's a hero and I, you know, he's great or whatever, that's the same phenomenon as people like idolizing Tony Montana or Walter White from Breaking Bad. You know, that's the same phenomenon as that. Mm-hmm. Code Geass, I feel like, is... It's like, yeah, he's a bad guy, but he's a badass, and he's getting results, and he's fighting for a noble cause. So it's kind of like you're kind of getting your cake and eating it, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he gets to be the bad guy, which has its own mystique and, like, coolness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also is the good guy doing the right thing for the right reasons or whatever. Like, in the first season, I feel like it's pretty clear you're supposed to be rooting for him, and he's kind of this otaku self-insert a little bit. Here's what I would do if I were involved in this crazy war.
Mm-hmm.
Like, power fantasy. That's kind of what it felt like.
Once again, I mean, to the show's credit, one thing I do really want... I do think Code Geass did really well. It does give him real flaws that are... It's not just, oh, he made a boo-boo, or he was badass but not quite badass enough. I think it really went out of its way to say, like, this guy has big problems. Like, he's not a good person, and he's got issues. And there are moments where he appears very genuinely uncool. The show makes him look uncool, and you're supposed to think he's uncool pretty frequently in a way that, you know, most self-insert anime doesn't do anymore. But you're still supposed to ultimately side with him.
See, when Suzaku was bringing up that idea of the special zone for Japanese people, they weren't presenting that as the solution. They were presenting that as a stepping stone to more solution, to getting further. This was another step. So that was not the end goal. And I'm pretty certain Lelouch himself agreed with that at some point before he went accidental princess genocide on everyone.
Right. He did. Yes. But ultimately, I think the show... I think the second season allowed them to revisit that. I think it's kind of... I mean, like, you know, this stuff isn't... This stuff isn't set in stone, and I think the first time that he wrote that... I forgot the name of the showrunner on that. I know that he's responsible for many terrible things after, but... I think his goal originally was to say, like, oh, no, this solution was averted by coincidental tragedy. And I think the second season allowed him to go, okay, but what if it really happened... And if it really happened, it would just be used by the Britannian forces, by Schneisel, as a form of control. I think he went back on that, and he said, nope, Lelouch's way is the only way. This would be nice if this was an escape, but it's not. I mean, you could look at it either way, but I think the second season revisits the special zone thing and goes, okay, nope, that really wouldn't work.
I think, the special... I do remember the second season did revisit it, but... they revisited it, and said, no one trusts us anymore because of what happened last season. I'm not sure it made a definitive statement on that either way.
I mean, and they also tried to do that with offering amnesty to Zero's crew, to the rebels. It was like, hey, you can't escape this. Even if you do go to China and it's like, okay, you guys are going to live in China safely, it will still be used as a point of control by evil people in Britannia. Like, there is no escape. The only escape is wholesale. It's like Mad Max. Mad Max Fury Road. You can't escape into the desert to the paradise. It's not going to happen. I know it would be nice if it did, but you got to go back to the base and take it over. Like, that's what the show ultimately does.
So
yeah, I do think the show does actually... does in the end side with Lelouch, which is where the ending eventually comes from.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I don't think it painted Suzaku as completely wrong the whole way through. I do think it was presenting each step he did, and particularly that scene where he is acknowledged and people start becoming Britannian from Japan as being, this is a step in the right direction. See? He is doing right things.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's like Lelouch is overall right but wrong some of the time in his decisions, and Suzaku is overall wrong but right some of the time in his decisions, and it's done that way to achieve a balance and to achieve it's like a false complexity. It's like a false, from my perspective as the Jedi who are evil, but it's not. It's framing is everything, and the framing ultimately comes down very firmly on one side, which. Yeah, if a writer's perspective, you need to ultimately side with one character, it's very hard not to. But this is very definitively siding with one character over the other. But yeah.
So I guess it didn't get that until the second season. In the second season, it definitely sided one way.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But overall, the first season, I just think, is much better written than the second season.
No shit.
Yes, yeah. And so at the end of the first season, that's you were totally in love with this show, right?
Mm.
And, yeah. Much. Okay. So chiefly, like, what was your takeaway from it? Like, would you say, did it have a message? I mean, I know it had this, like, we're just talking about the first season here. What was your takeaway from it? Like, why do you think it spoke to you so much?
See, I feel like we're spending an awful lot of time talking about the themes, whereas the grand reason why people love Code Geass, and me certainly, is it's the bombast and presentation in which it sets about these dramatic twists the show does. So when there's a dramatic twist that says, and Britannians are evil, we are going to take over as Area 11, you know, when he first makes his appearance, he burns a Britannian flag to reveal himself. He does things like that. There's such fantastic bombast and great presentation to every time they deliver a dramatic twist, and that's what makes it so compelling. And so I want to see what happens next, because I want to see how dramatic they introduce the next twist.
Mm-hmm. Right, you wanted to see how theatrical
and ridiculous they get. Like, I do think Code Geass is more to it than a lot of people give it credit for, but like, I'm not going to say it's, you know, the most deep and meaningful show around. It's not, you know, Ghost in the Shell.
Right.
It's
it's dramatically more entertaining than Ghost in the Shell, I will say.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and I got that. In the first season, I totally understood it. I was like, oh, the bombast, it's the theatricality, it's the posing and the speeches and the, you know, I thought the mech fighting was kind of underwhelming. Like, I didn't think it was very good. I thought it was kind of not particularly well directed. And
I generally agree with that.
Yeah, I thought,
which is weird because I know we're not talking about the OVAs, but they dramatically improve in the OVAs.
Really? Okay.
Which is quite interesting. They use entirely CG animation, and it's the only time I've seen CG mech fighting where I've been like, oh, okay, CG mech is might actually be the future.
Right.
But as for the TV show, not so much.
Yeah, they seemed like they had a real trouble keeping the geometry of the nightmare frames consistent. Like, it felt like it was, maybe those robots are just really hard to draw, but it did oftentimes, like, the fight animation between robots was pretty jank. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I totally understood what you were saying. And for that, I was like, yeah, okay, right, it was entertaining, that was fun, you know, sure. I just didn't see a lot else to it. I was mostly relieved that the sort of standing accusation against Code Geass that it is this nationalist nightmare, right-wing propaganda from Japan was not true at all.
No.
I was mostly relieved that that is a completely overblowing the situation.
Again, it's
not
like
only
saying,
that, borderline misunderstanding the show,
yeah,
to it, say that.
I can't think of a I'm sure somebody will think of a much better metaphor, but I can't think of a better metaphor than that's like saying Independence Day is jingoistic. It's not completely untrue, but it kind of makes you want to give the person a side eye.
Yeah, you're like,
I don't think so. There's jingoistic like Hollywood movies, and Independence Day isn't really touching it.
Right. But it was.
I do find
it,
the right wing bit particularly bizarre. It's like, this is one that's all about standing up for the people who are at the bottom of the food chain and making sure everyone's equal. I'm pretty certain that's about as left wing as you get. But
well,
hey.
It's, yeah.
And the right wing character, there are right wing straw men in the show, Japanese
right
wing
exactly,
nationalists.
Yeah.
And it's
right.
like, and they are bad people.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really fly.
Yeah. So so all of that, you know, that kind of went away. I was like, well, that was entertaining. Now let's see what the second season's all about. And this is where my troubles began. So the second season, so the first season ends with Lelouch's identity being revealed to Suzaku, and they're in a gunfight, and they both fire their guns at the same time. Season ends.
Mm-hmm.
Season one opens. They're back at school, chilling out, being bros, and they both have amnesia. So you can imagine my disappointment immediately. That
well,
they're that is what they're doing, and at first it seems like, oh, they just came up with an incredibly hacky way to reset everything and have it basically start where the first season started.
How can we repeat plot points? I know.
Yes.
And they do repeat
yeah,
plot points.
And they sure as fuck do. Like, I'm like, you're kidding me, we're just gonna do all of this over again, and to wit, that is effectively what happens. The story takes a dramatically different turn, but effectively, Lelouch starts out at zero again, no pun intended, and
yeah.
has to become zero again. He has a new younger brother who wasn't there before, named Rolo.
Rolo.
Named
like
Rolo.
Like the candy.
Who is clearly a plant who has been set there to, for some fucking reason, somebody with a better understanding, maybe.
He's
Joe,
to replace,
can you?
He's to replace Nunnally in Lelouch's memories, because they
yes.
could rewrite that. They could rewrite Nunnally out of his memories, but they had to have like somebody's face sort of replace her, or else it would get kind of sticky. So they put Rolo in there.
So,
well, the real reason is because the show needed a bit more yaoi fangirls.
Right,
on board, so let's introduce a cute younger brother.
Ugh.
It didn't work. Nobody took to Rolo. Everyone hated Rolo, I think, because...
Oh, no, yeah, they did.
Yeah.
He reminded me of Suwabuki from Utena. Like,
yeah.
less likable version of
Suwabuki is likable, though.
Yeah, like I said, less likable.
Yeah.
He's not as likable. But, Joe, can you sort of run down the first, like, let's say half of the second season? Is that possible?
Yeah, well, again... So the context here, this is quite important to understand with the show, is that so the first season blew up in a way that Sunrise did not expect. They kind of knew, they knew they had a good director. He'd done things like Planetes before.
Yeah.
But when it blew up, they changed time slot from a late night anime focused time slot to the like mid to like the 6 o'clock time slot. And he was told at the time, you have got to make this, there's going to be a new audience watching this. Let them in gently. You have to change the script. And so the reports at the time was that he was super annoyed about that, really hated some of the changes he had to make to his story, which may be why the guy didn't direct another anime for the next 7 years.
And then he made Marie the Virgin Witch,
which
is super which great.
I quite liked,
yeah,
but hey, that
was really good.
Which was nice. Oh God, I hope he directs more anime. But anyway, so the first season is pretty much exactly the same as the second at the start. You know, he starts as nothing. He gets his memory back when C2 appears. He gets the gas. He commands his ragtag group as Zero again. They kill the Viceroy again.
Right.
They
yes,
use the
like,
same technique in the Nightmare Frames. He uses his
yeah.
Geass.
Well, no, this time they do the thing where they collapse an entire skyscraper on top of his head, which then leads into a Chinese embassy, which then he makes a dramatic reveal in that this is the start of the new Japan in this one room.
Right, well, I like that they even... His Geass was even used the same way, which is like,
yes.
Kills a room full of dudes, then steals somebody's nightmare and uses it to spy
yes.
out of their nightmares for the Black Knights. It's like, man, this is every single beat. Ugh.
okay. And then go straight back to school and they have a goofy school episode. Yes. It is exactly the same.
There's a goofy school episode that leads into the second half of the show where for some reason they're all wearing butt hats. Like, they're supposed to look like hearts, but they look like they have butts on their heads.
It's the Butt Festival of Buttington.
This is the same episode where it is... They introduce a guy who can cancel out the Gias. Mm-hmm. This ability, by the way, is neutralized very quickly because you would have to write a totally different show if someone could actually just cancel out Lelouch's Gias powers.
All the time.
Yeah, it's almost dangerous. They're like, hey, why don't we introduce this ability? And it's like, whoa, hang on.
Easy.
You know that would totally fuck up our plans, right?
I mean, it does seem like they planned ahead. They gave it to the stupidest character in the show, yeah. Mr. Jeremiah Gottwald.
Mr. Orange.
Yeah.
Yes. Again, more context for him. He was supposed to be a throwaway character in the first season, but because his appearance in the show was so... That moment, the twist with the orange in the first season, which was around about episode 4, was, I think, that was this kicking off moment for when the show really got good. Mm-hmm. That he became something of a fan favorite character. So when he reappears at the end of the second season, yelling out All Hail Britannia and this giant orange-shaped mech,
yeah,
like... He had only been rewritten to the show because we need to bring this guy back. People really like him.
Yeah.
It's like his superior.
He's basically Abdol from Stardust Crusaders.
Well, he has no pretense. I like the character too, because in a show full of people with pretense and feigned complexity, Jeremiah Gottwald's entire character is, yeah, I'm a badass and I serve only the most badass and the people that I respect and I'm a superior race of being, and it's like that is in his entire character. There's nothing more to him. So they literally like half kill him, turn him into a cyborg, give him Gias canceling powers, and he just runs rampant going zero, and it's like, yay. So yeah, Jeremiah's
justification is the worst as well, because you can tell it was like nearly every other character. It's like, all right, you went to some length here to justify their actions, but it makes sense within everything we've learned about them. For Jeremiah Gottwald, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, I mean, it's consistent in the same way that a gorilla's behavior is consistent. Like, he's just id. Like, that's it. He's just pure id, and it's kind of refreshing. It's like, no, they didn't have to write, because the character writing in Code Geass is not very good. It has its moments. It has its moments of cleverness, but I don't think it's very good. And I think for the most part, their cast of thousands is filled with some really bad anime stereotypes. But they try to give depth to a lot of those stereotypes in a way that fails. Like the what's her Violetta, her stupid subplot is terrible, and Millie's subplot is terrible and stuff like that. But Jeremiah is just Jeremiah, and there's no attempt to give him anything more than just being an entertaining presence on screen. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the silly school stuff leads to, we didn't mention this, but Lelouch has a love interest in the first season named Shirley, who was a member of the school student council. So this is where the student council stuff proves to be, I guess, kind of important, because they couldn't figure out another way to write these characters into the show.
Yeah.
But he had a love interest whose father he murders as part of one of his operations, right?
Yeah.
She dies as a result of his actions. He has this tearful thing where he has to brainwash her with his Gias so that she forgets about him and everything and doesn't have all this pain in her life that he has caused. Jeremiah shows up, cancels that, and then she remembers, oh shit, Lelouch killed my dad, but I love him.
It's funny because Jeremiah is just testing it. There's no plan, and it's like the Euphemia genocide thing where
it's accidental.
Somebody told, please tell me what the name of the showrunner is because I can't remember his name, but it's Okuchi, I think. Somebody told him that tragedies rely on contrivance. And he took this the wrong way. It's like, yes, tragedies rely on contrivance, but it's thematically relevant contrivance. No way, come back. What are you doing? So he just writes Jeremiah testing out his powers randomly. He's like, let's see if this works. Beep. Well, I don't know if it worked because there's nobody nearby who's like affected by Gias. So, but at least I tested it. Leaves room.
That's
it's like,
it.
What? God damn it. You know, it's great. I mean, it's great and bad, but it's great.
Yeah. Anyway, so in the next episode... So Rollo, we should point out, was originally working for the secret Britannian cabal. Like, what exactly was Rollo doing before he switches over to Lelouch's side?
Just an assassin, I think. Because he has a... So the Gias power is a bit more complicated and gets into some really weird territory later on in the season. But generally, other people can have different Gaius powers, which include things like being able to see 2 seconds forward in time, or in Rolo's case, he can make everyone within a set distance just stop moving.
Right. But it stops his heart.
Yes.
It's a fatal flaw in his Gaius, and you can... I don't know if you haven't seen the show, guess what happens to Rolo? Anyway, Rolo comes across Shirley, who reveals that she knows all of this stuff, that she knows Zero's true identity.
Him. Yeah.
And then Rolo kills her.
Yeah.
But he doesn't finish her off. He leaves there to die so that Lelouch can run up and have a moment with her before she dies.
Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to give Lelouch more motivation, but it kind of doesn't.
I think it was just,
it was just sad. Like,
it was a loose end that they were trying to get rid of. It's like, we don't have anything else for Shirley to do.
Yeah.
But people like her too much to just get rid of her or write her out. We have to do something significant with her. And so what they do with Shirley that is significant or meant to be significant is give, Lelouch the motivation to destroy Gaius in some way. Not just take down Britannia, but destroy this power, which does play into the ending. Like, Shirley's death is important. It's not so much the significance that Shirley's death has that's a problem, because that is important. It's just how it goes about it. She's like, oh no, I suddenly remember this. Well, I can't trust Suzaku and Lelouch because I can't trust them. I bet I can trust Rolo. He seems nice. Splorch. So, yeah.
Anyway, so that happens, and then this leads into... Jeez, the real stupid stuff, where the show then introduces a kill God scenario.
Yeah.
Wherein it turns out Lelouch's dad, the Emperor...
He's trying to do End of Evangelion.
Basically, he thinks that all of humanity lives behind these masks. Everyone's lying all the time. Everyone's deceitful. You can't trust anybody. Humanity is a failed experiment, and so let's merge everyone into one collective unconscious that we will refer to as God.
Mm-hmm.
But this basically strips away everyone's mask. Blah, blah, blah. Lelouch is like, no, man. And stops his dad from doing that.
Well, to make matters worse, they had to get rid of Lelouch's motivation to see his mother avenged by saying, and your mom was in on it, too.
Yes.
And... so the dead spirit of his mother, who is alive because of her Gaius powers, this gets really silly.
Everyone has Gaius powers at this stage.
Everyone. You get a Gaius power. You get a Gaius power. And so his mom and dad are like, well, we were trying to cause Third Impact. And we did all this. We murdered your mother to protect you. And Charles being his dad, really loves his children. And he did this to make them, you know, like to protect them from the evils of the world. Because otherwise they would have been targeted by V2, which is C2, but a boy. It gets really stupid. And yeah. And then he cancels that out. And he says, no, I don't want Third Impact. And God is like, oh, well, okay. This guy's more handsome than you, Charles, so I'm gonna listen to him. And that's how that goes down.
During all of this,
basically what C2 says during the whole thing, I thought it makes sense within Lelouch's goals, which is the sense that he doesn't want people looking back into the past, in the sense that he doesn't want the Japanese looking back and thinking, oh god, I wish the country was just like how it always was. Mm-hmm. And in this world of Third Impact that they're trying to create, he's like, no, you're just trying to do that, so I'm going to destroy it.
Well, he values diversity, and he values knowledge, and he values people being able to trust one another, which is part of his beautiful, dark, twisted romance, is that he has to lie constantly to everybody, even when he doesn't have to. Even when it would make more sense if he was using his brain to be truthful with someone, he lies to make himself look more evil. But it's sad because he really values, like, you know, openness and trust, but he can't because, you know, and it's because it's tragic. But yeah, like, it's kind of dumb when you really sit down and think about it. It's like, I think the story would work so much better if it was just focused on the political underpinnings of this and him trying to overtake his father, and it wasn't just like, no, your dad was the good guy in a previous JRPG, and he's really doing this all for you, and it's like, why'd you have to make Charles like a fake good guy and kill God? Like, you don't need it. Dumb.
All of it struck me as, we have to get to 25 episodes somehow, and so we're just going to throw in all this shit, like half-written shit,
yeah,
to stretch it out. Like, the end of this show could still happen in the exact way that it happens without any of this crap happening.
Yeah.
Like, all of it. The plot with the Chinese people that goes fucking nowhere. Like, anywhere.
The Chinese plot, that whole four episodes of Chinese rubbish.
Pure.
Apparently in the... Patty. So they didn't make recap movies for this, which of course they did, because they always do for popular franchises. Right. They cut that entire section out.
Of course.
There is no China arc whatsoever.
Yeah.
I'll give you an idea of how much they value that particular arc.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Let's Kill God stuff was just a way to get his dad out of the way as a threat. Because the show is eventually going to come down to Lelouch versus Suzaku, and then in the end it comes down to Lelouch versus the world. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it comes down to, and you can't have the final boss be... His dad. Like, that's the show, that would be an anticlimax.
Although, really, like, if they had structured the show a little smarter and it was actually about character arcs, then that would be...
It would have been fine, but that's not the way they went.
But that's not what the way they went with it, which is, I think, the strongest aspect of the show. It's most, like, hidden... Like, the hidden strength of Code Geass, and I'm not sure they realized this was there, but it was, and I wish they'd tapped into it so it could have been, like, a good, thoughtful, smart show, is the idea that Lelouch becomes his father. I think that's the most, like, smart part of the entire show is showing Lelouch becoming somebody who hates his dad, starting from somebody who hates his dad and hates everything he stands for to becoming him, and it does that very well, and I wish that had been the theme, that they could have just gone with a classic Oedipal thing and had, like, actual tragic twists that reflect the theme. And if they had, then it would have been a lot stronger. But it doesn't go that route. It's just like, oh, you have a really, like, nice hidden Oedipal story hiding here, but you didn't use it.
I think they are half aware of it, though, because I do remember one specific scene. Wonderful, dramatic shock of Charles with his deep, booming voice laughing to the sky, going, "Yes, Lelouch, now you are fit to be called my son after he does something especially evil."
Right. I think that if they had been fully aware of it, they repeat, when they're aware of a thematic thread in their thing, they shout it to the heavens so many times in that show that I think if they were aware of that as a really strong theme that really mattered in the show, that Lelouch or somebody else would have shouted, "I've become my father," because that's what kind of show this is. But they didn't, so I don't think they were aware. We were aware of it.
The show,
or maybe one of the writers was aware of it.
The way the show is written, it's a very and then.
Yeah.
That's the way the show is written. And then this happens. And then, can you believe this happens? And then, oh my God, this happens. Like, that's the way the show is written. And so that style of writing, and there's a lot of shows like this, comes across as half baked, clunky, done quickly. So like written in a hurry. You can imagine like a big whiteboard with a bunch of arrows pointing to circles, pointing to other arrows with a lot of question marks in there. And there's like, I'm sure that they were, these are people who wrote the show. I'm sure smart guys, they're creative people. I'm sure they were aware of all this stuff. They just didn't want to go that direction. They wanted to keep doing the and then, because at this point, Code Geass is being sold on being crazy, on you don't know what's going to happen next. There's going to be crazy plot twists, and you won't see it coming. And so we just have to keep pushing this plot twist thing. So all these thematic stuff, it's shreds. You're looking at loose ends and bits of things that could have felt like it could have been more. But ultimately, all of this stuff that happens in the middle is where the show totally lost me. I thought I was just watching fucking gobbledygook. Like, this show has lost its way completely. Its train of thought is totally derailed. Once they get through the Let's Kill God JRPG scenario, the show turns into mush. Lelouch comes out and is like, "Now I'm the emperor." He just announces that now he's the emperor because he killed the old emperor.
I disagree. I think that's where the show picks up and was.
Well, it's mush up until this point. And then I should rephrase. It's mush for most of the second season.
Right.
The last, like, three episodes, it still takes too fucking long to get to the point.
Yes.
But that is kind of
where it's going to end.
That's the ending still feels like the ending of the show, and it was always going to be the ending of the show.
Yeah.
It's just the way that they got there is so fucking stupid and infuriating that I was angry at Code Geass by the end of it because of all this crap in the second season. I felt, especially during the Kill God stuff, like I was trapped in a room with a philosophy undergrad who had just taken like his first semester of courses, had some big ideas he really wanted to tell me about, but they're all sort of half-baked ideas. None of it makes... It's just babbling. And it's like, oh, well, but man is truly this way. And it, like, I mean, shut up. Like,
yeah, it doesn't mean anything.
This is meaningless drivel from like a 19-year-old philosophy major. That's what it felt like. And a lot of JRPGs feel that way. Mm-hmm.
Like, if that's the one thing Lelouch is wrong about, it's not making it, I mean, as framed by the narrative, like, you could say from your perspective that he's wrong about everything, but as framed by the story, and if the story thinks he's right, if there's one thing that Lelouch is wrong about, even by the story's perspective, it's that he had to lie, like, the one thing that takes him down and eventually destroys him, even if it's in a dark, beautiful, twisted way, is that he lies too much, is that he takes things too far, and he should have trusted people more. And yet, the show goes on and on about masks, and ultimately it's like, no, people have to wear masks to keep themselves safe. They can't just be honest with everybody all the time. Everybody has to fit into different roles and be seen as different symbols and stuff by different people. But it's like, but the show is actively disagreeing with itself there by saying that Lelouch used too many masks and lied to too many people, and in the process got more people killed. It is... it's like confused, so it ultimately ends up saying nothing.
So it says nothing. I feel like it says ultimately the point of Code Geass, and we should just say the in the end, mm-hmm. His plan is I'm gonna become Hitler.
Yes,
the Hitler of the world. Mm-hmm. Everyone will hate me so much that they'll unite when I die, and so I will bring about world peace and harmony and the dream society that I wanted to make from the beginning by allowing myself to be killed. In this really dramatic and bombastic way, and then the world comes together, the end.
Yep.
So, the point of Code Geass is dictatorship is bad.
Yep.
Which we knew at the beginning. We knew that from the get-go.
Yeah.
They made it clear, dictatorship is bad.
Mm-hmm.
All of this fucking bullshit in service of that one simple thing everyone already knows is true... This is why I got so angry at Code Geass, because I felt like I just wasted a whole bunch of my life
mm-hmm.
watching someone who isn't particularly good at writing bombastic fantasy spend the last 25 episodes do fucking nothing in service of the most basic-ass message possible. That's why I was so mad at it.
If only they had dropped the stupid masks and what is true governance and what is true nationality thing. If only they had just dropped all that shit and just gone with the sins of the father narrative, it would be so much better.
I feel like you and I have had plenty to say about this.
Yes.
And I feel like Joe has not had his say.
Uh-huh.
So, Joe, season 2, please.
Well, season 2 is worse than season 1. Like, that's... Even from the bombastic standpoint, even from more basic things outside of themes, it's like, yeah, the show's just not quite as well written. The show suddenly gets really shitty about female characters.
Yes.
Like, it gets...
Fan service hugely jumps up, too.
Yeah, fan service in particular. It's like, suddenly there are panty shots in the show where they never were before. Yeah, that bugged me about season 2. But, like, I don't think his theme is just... Dictatorship is bad. It's theme running throughout the whole show, and it's like it was pretty bloody obvious about it as well, to the point of being a bit silly. Was it's you don't live in the past, you can't just sit around and pretend nothing's going to happen, you got to move forward. And that was why there was the whole stupid killing God sector. That was why the villain after, because there were multiple villains they had to get rid of before they could finally get to the ending of Schneisel, the main person in line to the throne, saying, I am now going to make everyone live in the present because I have this total annihilation machine hovering over the world. And that was like, oh, you can't live in the present either. That's basically the same thing. You've got to move forward. Like, it's a fairly basic message, but it's a bit more complex. Like, maybe to me, a bit more to it than dictatorship is bad. It's standing still or looking back to the past is bad.
Yeah, sure. I think the you can't dwell on the past, you got to move forward thing was obvious to the point of being like, this Naruto episode is about the power of friendship, so I'm not really going to comment on the power of friendship because that's super obvious.
But you're right though.
I think you're right, and it was I shouldn't gloss over that. It's really about two things.
Well, and I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. Like, when I saw the whole ultimately, his whole motivation at the beginning is Nanali. And so, of course, this attempting to be a tragedy, which I don't think it wears well. I think it wears the anti-hero adventure thing way better, and it shouldn't have tried to be a tragedy if it couldn't do it, and it couldn't. But the whole, I must betray Nunnally at the end to fulfill my destiny, I saw that originally as a price that he had to pay for his lyingness, But, I mean, his name is Lelouch, which means the shifty one in French, sort of. And I mean, like, I figured that was the theme, but you're right, that probably another theme in there, like, probably it was doing two things. It was like, this was the price he had to pay for his lyingness, but also probably Nunnally is his past, and she's too naive for him, and he can't just protect her when he's trying to protect something he doesn't believe in anymore. I think you're right. Like, that was a major part of that, is he had to let go of his past. He gets her back in the end, in a complete betrayal of character in a way that she would never act. As he lays dying, she's like, oh, I realized somehow that you were doing all of this for me this whole time. I love you.
She suddenly gets a magic power out of nowhere.
Yeah, she magically understands. Yeah. She magically understands all of his beautiful, dark, twisted sacrifice and goes, I love you, big brother. Like, in no way would that ever happen, but it's to give him some consolation at the end. I think they thought it would be too sad if that wasn't the case. But yeah, he has to sacrifice his relationship with her first. So you're right, like, that is definitely a part of it. I mean, the character writing needed to be better. All of this could be improved with better character writing.
Well, but I'm curious, Joe, like, what's your takeaway? Like, you finished season two, and now you're sort of known as being the guy who says, hey, this is good. This is a quality show. It is worth your time. I'm curious, like, after having seen season two, while I agree with you in part on season one, I don't know if it's worth anyone's time, but it's fun, I guess. I'm curious, like, after season two, in the sum total, like, what do you tell people about Code Geass? Like, why is this show worth their time?
Oh man, after season two, I think it's largely the same as season one, though. Like, the show, I think the show gets worse at every, like, individual thing it does, but it's still hitting all the same notes as season one. Like, if, to the point in the first half of the show, like, a bit too much. So they're still going on about you have to move forward, but what's the correct way to do it? It's still things like that. They hit it more awkwardly, but it's still the same. We're going to bombastically present this story about morality of terrorism, basically.
So and so that in and of itself, even though the writing falls apart and it gets really stupid, to you the basic quality is still there, which is the bombast and the theatricality of it is still enough of a draw. So that even though this show gets demonstrably just wildly stupid, it is still a fun time. And you're still having a fun time, and that's kind of what matters.
I evidently don't think it gets as stupid as you thought it did.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Generally, yes. I would agree with that.
Yeah, sure. Once they started arguing back and forth about, well, but humanity is all liars, and oh my god. Like, I was just ready to throw my computer out the window. Like, that is enough out of you two. Like, I'm leaving this philosophy 201 class. I'm 35. I'm too old for this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I came back around to it after that. I thought the stuff after that with him being the emperor was stronger. So I was like, all right, you're winning me back. But, like, yeah. But at the same time, like, it's not like from start to finish, I didn't care about the characters. Sometimes I was intrigued by Lelouch, and sometimes I was entertained by Jeremiah or Reinhardt, who I think is severely unappreciated, even by the show. It's like, why didn't you give Reinhardt more scenes? What's his name?
Diethard.
That's it. Dietard. They could pronounce it Dietard in the
fucking dub.
I just kept pronouncing it Diethard.
Diethard. I was like, Reinhardt, what's his name? Dietard. Okay, so Dietard is severely unappreciated. But anyway, like, I didn't actually... none of them were well-written enough to where... they were still anime stereotypes. Lelouch is the most developed character, and he's still just, like, not sympathetic. And so, like, that's the biggest problem for me, is, like, I enjoyed the plot twists, I enjoyed watching the animation and the ridiculous character designs and their faces, and, like, all that stuff was fun to watch, but it didn't touch my heart. So it's, like, 50 episodes and you didn't touch my heart, I don't know if I can recommend it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, did you like any of the characters? Like, did you have favorites?
I guess, particularly the second time around, I liked it. Again, maybe if I say Dietard is basically by author insert, which is to say, spending his whole time filming everything going, yes, put more dramatic into this.
Right.
Yeah.
He's
give you an idea of what I like. But I like Lelouch mostly as Zero, doing the mask he put on as this dramatic savior of everyone, the idea that he was a symbol. Particularly, I like the second season where they did the I'm Spartacus thing. It's like, no, really, he is just a symbol. That idea. Right, I also liked some of the dramatic grandstanding of Cornelia in particular, who's the villain for most of the first season. Mm-hmm. I thought she had fantastic ways of just a very dramatic lines when she came to trying to shout down Zero. And those confrontations I thought were fantastic.
In the second season, they had no idea what to do with this fantastic character, so they just tossed her around. They wasted Cornelia.
They got much better with Schneisel in the set. I thought Schneisel basically took over Cornelia's position.
Yeah, he was.
And I liked him. I think he was one of the kind of starlights for a otherwise quite a bit schizophrenic second season, shall we say.
With Cornelia, they spent the time to build up why she would be smarter than Lelouch and why she would think of things that he wouldn't. With Schneisel, it was just like, okay, here's the perfect character who thinks of all the things that Lelouch doesn't. And that's just his character. It's like he's a plot device, which they all are. But Cornelia, they did a better job of establishing why she would be smarter than him. Schneisel is clearly invented for the purpose of being his second-to-last bad guy, or whatever. You know.
I'm not sure. I thought Schneisel was presented as to be not mirror image, but he was a very similar kind of person to Lelouch. He was the person Lelouch looked up to.
But that's
He came up with very similar ideas to Lelouch, ultimately. Mm-hmm.
But that's
why the two of them could constantly read each other.
Remember Chinese Lelouch?
No, let's just forget about the whole Chinese arc. They certainly did.
Yeah, that's only like four episodes.
It was so funny. They're like, hey, look, it's Chinese Lelouch and Chinese Nunnally. And it's like, I get it. God damn it, I get it. Move on.
In fact, they basically said at one point, this Chinese Lelouch in K, they said, oh, he's like Lelouch's intelligence, but with Suzaku's skills.
Yeah, he's got Suzaku's muscle and Lelouch's brain. Watch him do nothing for the rest of the show.
You'd think a guy like that would be really important in a situation like this, but I guess not.
He had mysterious anime wasting away disease, so...
Oh, right. Anime death, yeah.
Filler art guy.
Yeah. So walking away from this, like, I didn't have any favorite characters. I did not give two shits about anyone living or dying. It was just like, where is this crazy ride going?
Yeah.
But it's hard because I think the fact that I didn't care about the characters or what became of them made it so that in the end the show really felt like a huge waste of my time. Like, that's ultimately contributed a lot to the way I felt about the show in the end, was that, okay, I'm watching all these characters do all this shit, and it's just one plot twist after the other, and it's big fight after big fight, and big twist after big twist, and in service of what? In service of two really basic messages and characters I'm not going to hang on to. I don't want a Lelouch action figure. Mm-hmm. I don't have any desire to see those characters do anything ever again. If they announce a sequel, I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. Like, the show ran itself into the ground with craziness, all in service of what I felt was just this empty nothing. Like, I just felt at the end nothing. It didn't make me feel anything but anger that I had spent all this time in service of nothing. And that was my big takeaway from Code Geass, was like, I like a junk food and I like a thrill ride like everyone else, but the roller coaster needs to last a minute, and the junk food is like one meal every like 6 months or something like that. 50 episodes of junk food is too fucking much. Mm-hmm. And Hope had a really good point. She said, well, you're watching this week to week, it's very different. Binging it at once is a different experience, and watching it week to week, it's a water cooler thing. And I understand the appeal but even then, watching this week to week, that's a year of your life. And I just felt like at the end of it, no, it wasn't fucking worth it. Like, why? Why did I watch that shit? Like, it felt like I ate like this big fucking like bacon triple cheeseburger. And in the end, all I feel is a little sick and bad about bad about my choices.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how Code Geass made me feel.
I enjoyed it from the perspective of, I know the most talented person involved in the production of that is Goro Taniguchi, the director. And oftentimes when I'm watching anime, it's more about the writer. But I've seen what the writers of Code Geass went on to do. It's a lot of bad shit. And yes. Unsurprisingly.
The fact that a bunch of them went on to write Guilty Crown makes you go, oh yeah, oh yeah. Well. Well. This is what happens when Kogeese is bad.
Kogeese.
This is what happens when you don't have Garo Taniguchi directing it.
Yeah. But, and Kogeese is held up as like, well, that one, that's the good one. Once you get to Guilty Crown and fucking Valvrave and now Cross Age, like... People point to those as like, oh, you weren't bad.
Yeah.
Well, you watch what came after.
And it's
trying
true.
To recapture the success of Code Geass.
Yeah. And it's like, true. And I mostly appreciate, like, I appreciate Code Geass on a metatextual level, basically. Metatextual, that would be like hoity-toity up butt. But, like, metatextual in this case, like, I mean, like, I appreciate how good it is at what it does, even though it doesn't do a lot of things well that I would consider good storytelling. It is very, very good at capturing the intensity of a moment. Even with, like, the fact that I didn't care about any of these characters, and I wasn't reading any deep themes into this show, and yet I was still excited by and blown away by the dumb twist. Even when I thought the twists were stupid, it knew how to make a moment feel like it was important, and all of that is in the direction, and the direction in the animation, and all that stuff. Like, it's just really well directed. It's a script that I think would be like absolute garbage, and nobody would care about in other circumstances. And it's I don't know. It's a lot of stuff that I think wouldn't work if the direction wasn't so impeccable, but it is, and it fucking lit teenagers on fire. Like, it taps into those teenage emotions really, really hard. I think even more so for Japanese teenagers, because they're watching these characters, like, they're watching their culture literally be buried and people hanging out in bunkers where they're hiding the Japanese flag and stuff like that. Imagine if that was an American flag. Like, teenagers would go crazy for that in America. Like, it is very much an oorah, like, this is my fantasy, like, fighting back against people who are trying to take what matters away from me, like, all that stuff. It taps into that really hard, and I think it really does a really good job of it. And yeah, it doesn't make it a good story, but it makes it, like, it makes it a success. It's like the best, like, Hollywood blockbuster kind of success, except it's anime.
You're talking about kids as well. It's the idea again, it's this don't look into the past thing. That's definitely a teenager, like, stupid adults looking into the past, always living on past Japanese successes. No, I will take Japan into the future. You know, things like that.
Japanese, it was a big hit in America because it's directed really well or whatever, but it was astronomical and is still, like, one of the highest selling anime in Japan ever because it just tapped into those feelings of the demographic for anime, which is this very specific age group, and, you know, it was like it knew what it was doing, and it's like, okay, well, I can appreciate that even though all this other stuff is lackluster. It's like, you can do one thing really, really good and still get off the ground.
Except season 2 changed a lot of that, and it's almost universally, at least based on what I've heard, maybe I'm wrong, Joe, you probably know better than I do, but season 2 seems to be universally hated.
Like, well, if you want to take a look at where it is ranked on the top anime list on ANN or any sites like that.
Sure, that's why we're talking about it, but I always felt like
the second season 2 as well, though.
The second, it always felt like the second season was there because they were talking about the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing. Maybe I'm wrong.
People like the ending.
Because I've definitely seen shows where they go from one season really highly rated to the second season not. A recent example would be Psycho Pass, for example.
So maybe this is my bubble then. My bubble.
Yes.
Basically, it's like, can you believe how fucking dumb season 2 is? But that's just my bubble. Larger anime fandom didn't think it was. They were thrilled by the ride. Like you were.
Yeah, and you do very quickly notice which bubble you're in because, you know, you go into one anime forum, you type Code Geass, what do you think? And it'll be very quickly clear that there is a consensus within that fandom.
Okay.
Like, more so than I think with nearly any other thing, apart from maybe, I guess, Clannad would be the other one, where you go to one forum and people all absolutely hate it, and then you go to another forum and everyone thinks it's the greatest thing of all time.
So it's love it, or it's absolutely, like, rapturously love it, or hate it with burning passion. Not a lot of in between.
I think actually anything the three of us here encompass the three Code Geass fans. Person who absolutely loves it for its ridiculousness, for but thinks there's more there to it, which would be me. This person who thinks it's completely ridiculous, there's nothing else to it but love it for that, and that would be Hope. And then the person who just thinks it's so dumb the entire way through, even worse in the second season, and that would be
yeah.
That is, right. There is three opinions on Code Geass.
Sure, there you go. Actually, that's a really good point.
I feel like from my experience, it was like there was a very clear delineation from when people were hate watching. They were still in love with it. It was like it was a kid that was misbehaving and they had to deal with it. And it was like from the Euphemia genocide all the way up to Schneisel sort of taking over from Charles as the villain. That bar was where they were like, hate, but I can't stop watching it, hate. But then, like, everything before that, so the first 20 episodes and the last 6 or 7 of the second season, they loved. So it's like this, well, they had awkward teenage years phase of loving a kid or something. I don't know.
I think the gap of actual bad episodes was a bit shorter. It was basically starts with the Chinese arc and ends with this stupid end of Evangelion bit.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true. I've seen that too. But yes. Universally, it's people unfairly, I think, dump all of their hatred for the parts of the show that they hate into Rollo. Like, Rollo is this weird avatar of hatred for everything.
Rollo barely has anything to do with the story either. That's
he is. And I think, that makes sense that he's the avatar of hatred then, because, like, the worst parts of Code Geass are the parts where nothing matters and they're acting like this is a big dramatic deal, but nothing actually matters. And Rollo is the perfect example of that, because he doesn't matter so hard. So Rollo and Nina, like, took the full brunt of hatred from people watching Code Geass, and then they, like, excused everything else for everybody else. It's like, oh, well, Lelouch, you know, even though he's part of all this shit, too, like, they just sort of, like, took all of their hatred for the bad parts of Lelouch's story and put it on the characters they hated. It was interesting. Like, Code Geass, another reason I can't hate it is because it had such a fun-to-watch impact on people around me. It's kind of like the whole Twitch Plays Pokemon thing, where it's like a weird social experiment watching how people responded to that show. So teenagers especially, like people in that specific age, how they responded to it is very interesting. So that's the other reason I can't hate it. The reception.
I don't think there's one like Code Geass since then in terms of that impact. Like Attack on Titan, everyone watched Attack on Titan. It didn't have this broad array of everyone came back to go, did you see the latest episode of Code Geass? Yes, wasn't it the most ridiculous thing ever? And then I don't think there's been another show in that vein.
I mean, in terms of the water cooler, like the exact kind of discussion, like can you believe what happened? Maybe not. Attack on Titan is a much bigger deal than Code Geass was. And maybe it just wasn't quite the same. But when Attack on Titan was airing, like when it was on Crunchyroll, absolutely, there was water cooler for Attack on Titan. That was that would dominate. Like that was one of those, like you mentioned, like you know what happens in Game of Thrones, even if you're not watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
that was Attack on Titan for me. Mm-hmm. Like I guess by virtue of following like your Twitter feed, Hope, I knew everything about that show like as it was airing. So yeah, totally, I would say.
Attack
it's not
Titan,
the same flavor, but yeah.
Yeah, Attack on Titan's not emotionally divisive. Like
no, it's not.
Code Geass is a Rorschach test. Like Attack on Titan is, because it's better written, is more, like, cohesive in people's reactions to it, and it's just, like, people are kind of happy about it, or if they don't like it, then there's, like, obvious reasons they don't like it. Code Geass, like, there's a variety of responses that are entirely personal, because it's not a deep show, and it's not very well plotted, and it's just sort of a Rorschach test, so watching teenagers react to it is violent and emotional and stratified, which is interesting.
I think the more specific thing with Attack on Titan was, I guess, in my water cooler, most of the people had read the manga already, whereas Code Geass, literally no one knew what was going to happen next.
That's
and
true.
Half the time you got the felt the writers didn't necessarily know either. But they knew general points they had to hit. It's like, here are your themes up on the wall here, now write something that also includes all these anime tropes that anime fans like.
Lelouch dies at the end, right?
Yes. Or does he?
Well, yes. Well, he does. C2 is alive, so Lelouch is dead. This is not hard math.
Yeah. Anyway, so, Joe, before we get to Twitter question, you said that you feel like the show has more to it than it might seem on the surface, and that there's people maybe give it a bad rap, or that they misunderstand it. I'm sort of wondering have we already discussed what you feel like that quality is, like what there is to the show that's more than just bombast, theatricality, and the two coherent themes that we were able to pull out of that?
I place more value then on the Suzaku Lelouch contrast in approaches of they're both trying to move forward but in different ways, and which one of these is correct. I'm place more value on that constant theme running through the show.
Because
I guess I thought it was more evenly portrayed than you guys gave him credit for, because of how Lelouch's actions consistently led to things that were bad for many people, such as Shirley's dad dying or things like that. Whereas Suzaku was making more noticeable gains throughout the show.
Yeah, so you basically, the philosophical argument that the show is having with itself, it was of tremendous value to you.
Yeah, it was the terrorism, is terrorism good?
I feel like it didn't do a good enough job at, like, I mean, look at Death Note. So Death Note was obviously not attempting to create an ideological war between Light and L. It was just trying to make a cool bad guy, and unfortunately had the side effect. Like, the writer has made no bones about the fact that he thinks it's crazy that people side with Light. And he's like, whoa, that was not my intention at all. I was just trying to make a really cool bad guy, like... Nothing that he does is justified. I thought killing him violently and tragically would, you know, be like, would get that across, but it didn't. But Lelouch and but there's still more stratification. Like, there's people on Team Light or Team L when they're watching it. I didn't know anybody on Team Suzaku. I know nobody on Team Suzaku. So I think that it's very interesting, and I think that maybe they were attempting to create moral ambiguity, but I don't think they succeeded, because there wasn't anybody who was like, oh, stupid Lelouch, I side with Suzaku. There was no one.
But they were very much the dissenting opinion, and I think that's more because if they actually gave it morality thought in terms of real world conflict, which is a bit silly to say about Code Geass, but anyway, is that they wouldn't necessarily side with Suzaku, but Lelouch is the cool person, whereas Suzaku, like, if he was a main character, he'd be a Gary Stu.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, so it is not cool to like Suzaku, whereas Lelouch is cool, and that's why people liked him, and that's why people wanted him to succeed, but in the actual universe of the world, his actions do lead to bad things.
Well, yeah, but all of that, the real thing that matters when you're trying to create an argument for people to talk about the moral ramifications of who is right and who is wrong, the only thing that matters is whether you succeed in that, and Code Geass failed in that. I think Death Note, which wasn't even trying to be deep, was more successful in creating a moral argument between Light and L than Code Geass was with Suzaku and Lelouch. Because even the people who agree with, like, oop, Lelouch made a boo-boo, this was wrong, they still come down on his side. Suzaku was just, they completely, I think, failed if they were trying to make him an equal to Lelouch ideologically. He is a likable-ish straw man, but he is not side-withable because of the way that the story is written. I think they tried and they didn't succeed, but they did not succeed on that one.
I mean, when I rewatched it, definitely than the first time I watched it, because I was a teenager who therefore thought Lelouch was cool.
Right.
So I obviously sided with him, but upon rewatch, I definitely was on Suzaku's side a bit more in terms of, I see what the show's trying to present here. I see why one would side with him, why you arguably should side with him in these occasions, even if the show, did ultimately come down on, maybe he wasn't so good after all.
Yeah, the effect that it has on the audience is ultimately the best argument, and I think they were trying. I don't think that they succeeded in creating a 50-50 whose side are you on, like, promotes discussion. All of the discussion about Code Geass was Uzaku, was the annoying idiot.
And I think that's because they did too cool a job of presenting Lelouch as being this awesome, cool person that everyone should want to be, even though he's... people like anti-heroes, people like villains. The whole reason they side with Light is because he's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So
there were a lot of people on the L side of the equation too, because this is targeted at nerds. I think for Death Note, it's like, this is targeted at nerds, and Light is disingenuous and polished and sort of he's representative of all the people who bullied them and looked down on them, and he's an academic, but he's not. You know, and L was who they really are, and he was honest. And I mean, L lies all the time, but you know that he's lying. You know, it was like, anyway, the Light and L division was successful, I think, in creating two camps. The Lelouch and Suzaku was not successful. Anyway,
I think the idea with Suzaku though is he's supposed to be right. That's why he's a Gary Stu, basically, is because he is the person who always does the right thing.
But he's right in spirit only, which means nothing. Like, just you're like, killing is wrong. Like,
make progress, though. That's the where I disagree, is he did actually make progress on his side.
Mm-hmm.
but he then the did show make things better for Japanese at the time. Mm-hmm.
Suzaki was able to achieve, in fact, I mean, the end of his arc, Suzaki was able to achieve righteousness by becoming Zero, by becoming the symbol that Lelouch approved. He completely gives himself up. Like, the last several episodes, Suzaku's side of the argument is so inconsequential that he doesn't even say anything. He is officially Lelouch's right hand for the last segment of the show. No argument, no nothing. It's just, you know, again, I think the show failed completely to make him any kind of ideological equal. He's just a straw man to be eventually struck down in a nice, gentle way.
Yeah, it's a one-sided argument.
Oh, well.
At least in my view. I totally understand what you're saying, and the point of my question was to get sort of a read on what you felt the quality was, and I completely understand that what you're saying is that this philosophical argument the show is having it's with itself is compelling. You liked those characters, and that was the driving, almost not a secret quality, but something that you feel makes the show worth recommending. It makes you think about those two sides.
Central conflict was the main thing. Like, as you said, the story is ultimately quite simplistic with all the things on the outside, but I thought that was a positive quality in the sense that every piece is driving towards this one central conflict between Lelouch and Suzaku.
Right. Yeah. And I understand that. I think that's valid. I think it's totally valid. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I think it's totally valid.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to these Twitter questions. We got a few of them. Lou Werdere, I don't know how to say his name. Liu Werdere asks, how much did Code Geass make you crave Pizza Hut? So, an important thing to mention is that Code Geass is chock-a-block with Pizza Hut, very heavy-handed Pizza Hut product placement.
Mm-hmm.
They are constantly ordering Pizza Hut. They are constantly talking about Pizza Hut. One of the characters is collecting points to get a free pizza from Pizza Hut. Which I assume was a promotion that's happening in Japan at the time.
My favorite thing is when they show is where there's a establishing shot between scenes of torture where they're showing the world has gone to shit without Zero, and there's a billboard for Pizza Hut in the establishing shot before they cut to a scene of imprisonment and torture. And it's like, huh.
My favorite was an extremely serious scene where one character, I think it's C2, has a slice of Pizza Hut pizza with hot dog crust,
mm-hmm.
and she's like, but it's your favorite, or this one has hot dogs in the crust, and he like smacks it out of her hand, and she gets very upset about this big dramatic like, no, smacks it away. I
prefer Domino's.
So the show did not make me crave Pizza Hut because I think Pizza Hut is awful.
Yeah.
Interesting little fact for you. So I watched the UK release. That has no Pizza Hut in it.
Yeah, right. They took the Pizza Hut out a lot for a lot of the international releases. I believe the Cartoon Network version did not have Pizza Hut.
Yeah, I don't know if the DVDs do. I have them, but I don't remember. Like, I was just, like, skipping through the show, so I don't think I stopped on, like, a very specific scene where they had pizza box. I think they restored it, I'm pretty sure. But, like, I know on TV that they took the logos out.
My favorite story about those Pizza Hut things was that it was on one of the DVD commentary tracks, was that the director, so the terms of their agreement, they only had to have a certain amount of like Pizza Hut logos in it, but they thought it was funny to have these Pizza Hut things in. So there were stories about how when the delivery man shows up with the Pizza Hut on his little motorbike, like they were like, you didn't need to put this in. This was way more. It's like, no, I just thought it was funny.
Yeah.
So that's kind of one of those signs that's like, no, the people who wrote Code Geass were in on the joke.
Yeah, sure. That's
you had
obvious.
To be, yeah.
That's obvious.
The show takes itself seriously, but they had to be kind of in on how silly it was. Like the facial expressions on the characters, like they're just too outlandish.
There's a wink to its step.
Yeah, a little.
It definitely knows it's being ridiculous.
And I do like that there's an AMV, I guess, of the Pizza Hut song to Code Geass. I do appreciate that video, so if nothing else. It yielded the Kentucky Fried Chicken and a Pizza Hut video for Code Geass.
Julian Marin asks, do you think the nationalism decreases or increases? I think it just becomes irrelevant very quickly.
Yeah.
I think the show just shows its hand that this is not about vilifying other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if this show were made today, I feel like they would have one enemy. That would be some version of China or Korea.
Yes.
And Lelouch would be all about building up the military and it would just be about military strength and an autonomous military that is not hamstrung by the U.S.
Yes.
That is what the show would be about, because that's modern, that's like current Japanese nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
This show is...
This show was made when America was becoming the technological powerhouse and Japan was falling away.
Right.
I think in some ways it's a kind of response to that.
Yeah.
But that's
sure.
a very, very loose reading. So
yeah, the nationalism in this show is it's so thin and like it's only surface. It's just it's so shallow that I can't like if you ask me, do you think the show is nationalist? Only in the same way where if you have a movie about America being invaded, the thrust of the movie is America wins.
America, fuck yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
But it's not like...
Which is jingoism, and yeah. that's you know, that might bother some people, and, you know...
Independence Day, here are aliens.
Right, yes. But I don't think it... The nationalism certainly does not increase. It is not making this horrible... Like, it's not making, like, racist generalizations about China, really.
Yeah, there are lots of, like, good Chinese characters, and the evil ones literally, like, look like the crazy Japanese right-wing nationalists, and they're eunuchs. And it's you know, it's like, oh, well, this is not a racist statement, this is just a, let me make a straw man evil government.
Yeah. He also asks, what do you think about people calling the show Deep? I know a ton of people who do.
Nope.
Yeah, no.
Nope.
It is not deep.
No.
What do you think, Joe?
No, not really. I guess there's very few anime I class as actually being really that deep. It has a message, but being a message is different from being deep.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not as in, there's more to it than, say, I don't know, Bakano or JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. We talk in terms of these grand bombastic... This is purely about the spectacle. You know, shows like that. It's more to it than those, but it's... It's not particularly deep beyond that.
No. I think it plays at being deeper than it is. A lot.
A lot.
It spends a lot of time doing stuff that I think if you spend a lot of time watching anime or in college, mm-hmm. all of it will feel like empty
calories.
Bluster. Yeah. It's just bluster.
It's definitely a fantastic first anime to ever watch, though.
Sure. Yeah, maybe it seems like jumping into the deep end. Like... That's the animeest anime that ever animated. Like, it's
yeah.
super anime.
But in a way, that's exactly the kind of thing. Because I remember someone is like, what's the first anime they watched that got them into? And it was like, Fooly Cooly.
Oh,
it's like, why
yeah.
would
yeah.
you watch that? And it's like, oh, wait, just throw them in at the deep end and give them the thing that shows that this is so much different than everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So you give someone Code Geass. It's like, this is anime.
Yeah, Fooly Cooly is almost more like an American alt comic
yeah.
than, like, it's Japanese for sure. And it's anime, mm-hmm. but it... In terms of, like, if you're going to say, which one of these is more anime? If you're using anime in, like, a pejorative sense.
Yeah. Yes.
In a commercial
Code Geass
sense.
Is more anime than Fooly Cooly,
yeah.
for sure.
In a commercial, like, when you think of, like, what's more Hollywood, and you're thinking in a commercial way, you're not thinking money or assets, you're thinking the pandering sense. Like, Code Geass is extremely anime, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Drunk Mitsuki asks, best sex scene with Table Coon, Code Geass or Shimonetta? So I guess Shimonetta has a similar scene. But Code Geass has a scene in it where one of the show's unfortunate crazy lesbians,
Nina, yeah.
Nina is like masturbating on a table edge.
Ouch.
I think that's what she's... I think she's just beating off. I don't think she's like ramming her cooch onto the
table.
No,
do you know how you know? And apparently they added this in for the DVD release, is you see a little bit of fluid on the edge of the corner.
Oh.
Wow.
There you go.
Ew, yeah, so
you have to be looking out for it, mind you. And by the way, when I first watched the show, so I was only like, what, 16 or 17 or whatever?
Okay.
Yeah, I had no idea what she
yeah,
was doing.
You're like,
apparently
what?
I was innocent enough to like go, what was that scene? Oh, anyway.
Yeah, that was the show's unfortunate psycho lesbians. No.
You know, it's still less gross than a lot of Code Geass's following its successors, which are really gross about women, and Code Geass is only a little gross about women.
Okay. Saburo 23 wants to know, favorite and least favorite twist? So my least favorite, I guess, was everything that happened in the second season. And then my most favorite was definitely accidental genocide.
Whoops.
I mean, how can you say no to that? It's just so crazy. Does anyone have anything different, or is that pretty much it?
No, my least favorite is the accidental genocide.
Okay.
Because it's so transparent, and it's like, I enjoy the twist that even though they're dumb, like, they keep me in the moment, I guess, and that the accidental genocide is such a, man, I'm looking at a script, and I don't feel anything for what comes after, which, I don't feel anything for the characters, but I did feel things for, like, moments. And the accidental genocide is like, oh, I wanted to like this more, and I can see a person writing the script now. So that was my least favorite.
It felt too manufactured.
Yeah, it felt way too manufactured. More so than everything else, which is already, like, super manufactured. I don't know about favorite. Somebody else go first so I can think of favorite.
Favorite twist would, I don't know, season one and maybe the very first Lelouch deciding to save Suzaku by calling the guy Orange and then making everyone believe he has his own ulterior goal with Orange Farms. That would be my favorite.
Sure.
Twist, because okay. that was the moment I fell in love with the show, of like, that is so ridiculous. I love that. And I love this dramatic way they present it all with him standing on the back of a Pope Mobile. Just the whole thing was perfect. But my least favorite twist, I guess, is season two, where C2 loses her memories because it was... The show had kind of developed a little bit of a nasty trend of just robbing female characters of their will, you know, just wiping their memories of, like, oh no, they did it with Valletta, they did it with...
Oh, yeah.
They kind of did it, they didn't, well, Euphemia sort of, but they also, and then they did it with C2, and it was like,
yeah,
oh,
and
please,
she spends,
please,
like,
please stop doing this.
She spends four episodes, I'm a slave girl, and you're like, ugh, God.
It was, particularly because she was one character who was completely in control of everything she was doing the whole time. To do that to her was like, oh, fine, do that to the one character who is completely in control of everything. Thanks.
Right.
Okay, I changed my mind on least favorite twist. It is the thing with Valletta, basically because it never comes... At least there was plot purpose to the accidental genocide. Valletta, like, they're holding on to her for she knows Zero's true identity, and then they do all this terrible shit to her where she loses her memory, apropos of nothing. At least magical memory loss, there's a reason for it. She, like, loses her memory because she hits her head, which is the worst. Like, at least magical memory loss, there's a purpose behind it, and there's a person purposefully changing somebody's identity or whatever. But, like, she gets magical memory loss, and then by the time she gets her memory back, her knowledge of who Zero is doesn't actually matter at all, and then she ends up marrying Ogi. And it's like, so her character had no purpose. Like, that was terrible. So that's my least favorite. My favorite is sort of, it builds from an original, like, so it comes about as the cause of Lelouch fucking stuff up, which is why it's my favorite. But Lelouch tells Suzaku to live against all odds. And that, you know, he's just doing that to save his own skin, but it really fucks with Suzaku, who has a martyr complex. And so my favorite twist is where this, dozens of episodes later, comes about to cause another genocide and the death, what looks like the death of Nanali. She's alive, but we think it's the death of Nanali, which is Suzaku fires off the not-nuclear bomb because it's the only way he can survive in that situation, and that's his Gias. So that, and I think also Lelouch's Gias causes Shirley to die. So those two, where it's like, Lelouch's Gias has effects into the future that he couldn't have predicted that are like, ha ha ha, those are the best twists, I think. That actually kind of feel like they mean something and were planned in some way.
The one other best twist would be at the very end of the episode, Orange owns an orange farm.
Yeah, that's great. He succumbs
just
to
with that
destiny.
that whole final montage of what all these characters did at the end. It's like, this is so dumb. I love this show.
What's great about that Suzaku one is that he's sitting there and he's like, well, I guess I will martyr myself after all. And it's like, did you just forget that you have this curse on you? And he's like, he gets the live thing and he goes, boop! And he just, like, reaches out and hits the nuke button like, oh, son of a bitch! You know, like, he has no control over it. Just, phew. It's great.
All right. Invalid Name asks, how disposable is Code Geass? Is there anything of it we'll want to remember in 10 or 20 years? I mean, I think the show will be remembered for a long time. I don't know that it will... I mean, they're making new stuff now, aren't they? Aren't they making a new OVA series or something? So, you know, who knows? Maybe it'll get remade at some point, like 10, 20 years from now or something like that. I think it'll live on. I don't know that it'll... It's, obviously, its popularity will fade. We're kind of probably at the nadir of its popularity right now.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll be forgotten. I don't think it's going to be... It was a gigantic hit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will be remembered the same as any other gigantic hit. I don't think it'll fade completely into obscurity.
Yeah.
I think the fact that it basically swung what Sunrise and a lot of other people made mecha shows in that vein from then on, and all of them bloody failed to do anything like Code Geass did, is there's still a legacy there, which is a kind of an unfortunate legacy, if we're being honest. But
yeah. Right, sure. The sad thing about those shows is they've never failed. They've always done pretty okay. So it's like they're never Code Geass numbers, but Guilty Crown, Cross Ange, Valrie, all that stuff, it didn't fail. It did pretty okay.
It all did fine. Yeah, it did. You're right.
Did fine. So that's why they keep making them, because it's like, oh, these will always do a little better than normal. Like,
meanwhile, Goro Taniguchi's one little pet project of Mary the Virgin Witch did nothing, so...
It bombed really hard. Like, there's bombs, and then there's Maria the Virgin Witch. Maria the Virgin Witch was like a new level of bomb, like 400 units. Like, it was Flowers of Evil level.
Okay, alright. Got a couple people asking about the music, which I think generally is agreed upon as one of the strongest elements of the show.
I think the visuals are a little stronger than the music, but yeah, the music's memorable. I like the heavy reliance on the horns. It's good. It's not great. I don't... There's way more anime music that's great, but it's pretty good, yeah.
Meh. Not being particularly... It's like, it's serviceable and it definitely adds to the dramatic moments.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly wouldn't go listen to any of it outside of the show.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't listen to any of it outside of the show. It just accents... It's another, yes, I think, example of good direction. It's... Music is used well direction-wise. But I think the visuals are way more memorable than the score.
I think the way it does use the music, like, there'll be a dramatic cue just as the Lancelot launches. Just very basic stuff, mm-hmm, but stuff it does enough and freakily enough that it adds to the moment. So that's why it works.
Good trumpets.
Yes.
Okay, Pudding Earl asks, and there's no relation to the character, I'm not sure, are there any other shows that deal with Japanese nationalism in a more intelligent way? So there's plenty of shows that dabble in this stuff, especially lately because it's on the rise.
Commentary.
In Japan. I would say Watch the Wind Rises. It's probably the most thoughtful and subtle thing out there about Japanese nationalism. And watch Kingdom of Dreams and Madness, which is the documentary about the making of The Wind Rises and about Studio Ghibli.
Mm-hmm.
You'll learn a lot about the Japanese right wing watching both of those things back to back. In terms of, like, thoughtful, that isn't just like pandering or using anime as a political sort of catcall for otaku to get involved in Japanese right wing nationalism. And by the way, this is not like unique to right-wing politics. Every political movement across the board uses media to try and bring people into its fold. It's not necessarily more insidious or whatever. It's just the truth.
Yeah.
It is the way a lot of these things operate. So you're getting a lot of that stuff right now. But thoughtful, The Wind Rises, I think, is one that comes to mind. Not just because also I'd happen maybe to agree with his politics a little bit, but it's... That's kind of the one. Everything else is sort of, hey, otaku, how about the military?
Or like, else it's super liberal.
Yeah,
like,
or it's different. or it's like Terror and Resonance.
Yeah.
It's giving you that anti-right-wing message, which, you know, I'm sympathetic to, but I fucking hated Terror and Resonance.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows. Joe, do you have anything come to mind for you?
Plenty that are worse.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
I don't know, as I'm flicking through my anime list, which maybe I should mention on an A&M cast, but anyway.
No, it's
the only
okay
one I could come up with was Eden of the East, so... And I'm not sure that's actually very much about nationalism so much.
Eden of the East is more about the complacent Japanese youth and stuff, which I hear a lot about. I don't know that that's true, but, like, I mean, that's complicated.
Eden of the East is more about neets.
Yeah.
And it's more about hikikomori than it is.
It's about Japan, but it's not about nationalism.
Yeah, so. I wouldn't say it's about nationalism. It's about Japanese people.
That's the best I could come up with. Other than that, it's just things like Mahouka and Gate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. This is sort of the two new poster children for bad nationalist anime.
But it's worth it. Gate is actually like quite well directed and written. It's just like got the most rotten core of anything, whereas Mahoka is just bad the whole way through.
Yeah.
Very successful though.
In Japan. Yeah, Kadian 1365 wants to know, should Gaius have just been the first season with R2's finale?
Yep. I would say yes.
I think it should have been only one season. Yeah. But Joe, how do you feel?
I think you could take a few scenes. The show felt like it needed to be better planned, because there's definitely a point at which they went, you've got to reintroduce a whole bunch of new people to this show. And also, it's got to be another 25 episodes. So at some point, yes, I feel like this is one of those things where if he got a chance to remake it in exactly the manner he wanted to make it, he'd probably jump at the chance if it wasn't for the fact that he was burnt by the whole process. Mm-hmm. And hence now only makes obscure 13th century medieval warfare anime, so...
Well, I mean, that had a IG budget, and it looked pretty nice. I mean, it was like B-level IG, but they had hopes for that thing. It wasn't supposed to be a little project, but it just completely failed, which is sad.
GW Otaku asks, opinions on the fate of Lelouch at the very end. At the time, fans were divided on whether or not he was dead, or if he was somehow alive, driving the wagon. So your site is named after this, right?
Yes, because I loved that it was just one single little scene that they put out. It's basically, the way I describe it is it's the Inception spinning top at the end. Doesn't actually mean anything, ultimately. It's purely there just to make you go, oh, for God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it doesn't exactly matter
it.
Whether
the fact
or not
that it spawned this giant discussion about the show and it kept people arguing for years and years afterwards. The reason I named my site after that was because it highlights what anime fan discussion can bring to the anime itself, or a scene that ultimately meant nothing.
Wait. So that's how people read that scene? I thought that scene was purely in there. That scene is the falling star at the end of Cowboy Bebop, which is to say, so when Spike dies at the end of Bebop, there's no way to really tell 100% that he's dead, so they insert a shot of his star dying and falling out of the sky to let you know without, it's cinematic direction, and Code Geass is a well-directed show. I thought that entire scene with C2 was in there to show you that Lelouch has to be dead, because the only way for him to survive that is if he... killed C2 and took on her immortality, which people thought maybe he would do until near the end, where it was obvious he wouldn't do that. But, like, I thought that entire scene, it's not to make you think that the cart driver is him, it's to let you know that C2 is far away and could not have been killed by him, and also she is alive. That was the point of that scene. That is in there to let you know that Lelouch is dead at the falling star at the end of Bebop, but I guess people didn't take it that way.
C2 says the line... But I guess people, the very final line of the entire show is, I guess sometimes people don't really die. Then she tips her head back and looks at the cart driver and says, isn't that right, Lelouch? And that was all people needed for the people who were just so madly in love with this one character to jump on that and say, oh no, he's not really dead.
Oh, well,
that's pretty strong evidence that he isn't.
Wait, she's not looking at the cart driver, she was looking at the sky.
It looks, though, if you look at very
sky.
Carefully.
I just watched it last night. It's the sky.
Okay, all right. The debate rages on.
For what it's worth, I'm on your side 100%, but I love that people left on that scene so much.
The fighting because continues.
I felt they did it intentionally to tease those people specifically.
Well, yeah, they may have, but it also serves the purpose of, like, here's the one way he could have survived that. He didn't take it, like, you know.
It's got dual meaning. See, that's Code Geass being very intelligently written and directed.
Right. Goro Taniguchi being a smart director.
That too.
Which female, Olive Minch asks, which female character is treated the worst? Callan, C2, or Shirley? Callan, I think, gets it the worst. Maybe C2. C2 has that whole, oh no, I'm a slave girl. Like, that's kind of the worst.
Shirley is a sacrificial lamb, but at least she isn't treated, like, gross. She's just, you're supposed to constantly feel sympathy for Shirley. Callan... I always think the worst treated female character is the one that you're supposed to dislike because they did nothing wrong, but it's just supposed to be your internalized hatred of women in some way. Like, so that would be Nina, not the other characters.
Yeah, that's Nina definitely is like the most shat upon by the narrative, like by the writers.
Yeah, and I think that also Villetta, who gets tamed. So, like... Shirley, you're supposed to love unconditionally. C2, you're supposed to love unconditionally. Callan, you're still kind of supposed to love unconditionally. So all three of those, like, even though bad things happen to them, I don't think... Those three love Lelouch. Like, those three kiss him on the mouth a lot. But I don't but they're not shat upon like some of the other characters are, like Valletta or Nina, which I think are the worst.
Callan always seems pretty in control of every situation. She does.
And she's the best, and this is never contested. Her gender is never brought up. She is the best mech fighter, period.
Yeah. So okay, they dress her up as a bunny girl suit in one episode, but hey.
I feel like they threatened Callan with rape too many times, and which happens at the beginning of season. A lot of this is just in season two. They threaten her with rape, like at the beginning of the show.
Right.
At the end, Suzaku has her in a strapped to a chair in this really low cut like dress that like only covers her nips, and like is like, I'm gonna fucking drug you to get the truth, and like it's this gross shit. And
but then she beats the shit out of him, which I appreciated.
That's true. I just you know, in terms of like the show kind of knocking a lady around and like, yeah, check out her ass while we're knocking her around.
Yeah,
it seemed like that was Callan's role a lot of the time. Like, I agree that she, you know, not a bad character. Maybe the character in the show that I kind of liked the most, if I had to pick, if I was like gun to head, pick one of these fuckers that you like the most, right. I guess it would be Callan. But yeah, whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to, it's mostly in the stuff that I read like intent, and I think a lot of the stuff that made the female characters gross in Code Geass was marketing. I don't think it was intent. Sometimes you can just read like hatred coming out of the screen, and with Code Geass, none of that. There wasn't not hatred for any female character coming out of the screen, just maybe ignorance and marketing a lot.
Yeah. Okay, so lastly, and I'm sort of curious, Joe, if you experienced any of this stuff. We got a question about from Custom Zaku about opinions on the massive use of picture dramas, CDs, sound dramas, things like that. Mm. And I'm wondering, I did obviously not go look at any of that stuff. Have you consumed all of the Code Geass like side stuff? Like there's manga, there's
no, there's video I wouldn't. Games. I think I started reading one of the manga and thought it was pretty bad and stopped and didn't really jump back on board with them. I have watched the new anime, the new OVAs. Nunnally in Wonderland is one of the most stupid, ridiculous things, and anyone who's watched Code Geass should totally watch that, because it basically is 25 minutes of it mocking itself. You know, they turn, you know, the special administrative stone into the special croquet zone where all the Japanese can play croquet. You know, Suzaku's spinning kick turns into a cardboard cutout of Suzaku being spun around in a circle. It is the show completely mocking itself. And someone told me on Twitter to bring up Nunnally in Wonderland, so I've now completed that.
That's a good refresher.
For all the rest of the stuff, like, none of it is integral to the story, so it doesn't really matter. It's just, hey, people like the show, let's give them more weird spin-off material.
Right.
Mm. So I like if that it's there, and I actually like that Code Geass has developed this completely ridiculous backstory that, oh, in this world, you know, Britain lost the Battle of Waterloo and had to retreat to America, which is why Britannia spreads out from America now. It's actually still the old British Empire that kept their old things. Like, that's their backstory. It means absolutely nothing in the grand scheme of the story.
Right.
But I love that they put that detail in. Just like, if you want to dig into this, like, we've put backstory in here. It's nonsense. But
they confused a lot of people. Like, hey, you're saying America's the bad guys? Because none of Britannia is coded American. It's all coded ancient British colonialism.
And that's like, because it is British colonialism.
Yeah, and it was like, well, none of this is like even slightly coded American. Like, there's no America in this story at all. So, yeah.
Okay, well, that actually wraps us up. Joe, it was a pleasure having you on for that two-hour discussion of Code Geass. It's very enlightening. I feel like I understand the show now from a different perspective. So it was great having you on. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. I hope I did some job of defending this show. Because I did look at, it's like, when I was invited on the show, I looked at your Twitter account to check, oh, wait, does he actually like the show? Oh, no, he doesn't. Well, this is going to be interesting.
I thought the first season was okay.
Oh, well, there we go. That's most people's opinion, and most people's opinion anyway, so.
Yeah. I think it's bad but fun.
Well, there you go. I think that pretty much sums it up. All right, that does it for us. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Joe for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.